the Arizona State Board for 5-4 Secondary Education meeting. First order of business, if everyone silenced their phones when we were in a dungeon in the other building. They didn't work anyway, but here they do. And also an unofficial, official order of business here. Lynn Ford, would you please stand? Here's a former member of our board.
Oh, I just put my microphone on first.
A former member of board who served with us for 8 years. So we would like to officially thank him for his service and thank you for joining us today. The board, upon a majority vote of the quorum of members, may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431-0383 on any matter of the agenda. The board, upon a majority vote of the quorum of the members, may also go into executive session to discuss or consider records exempt from law inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law pursuant to ARS 38431-0382. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Stanfield, are there any requests to change the order of the agenda?
No, Manager.
Since the meeting is being recorded, I will ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for the records, and also when we place votes, each member will state their name and then their vote.
Rachel Kearse, Administrative Assistant.
Kevin Mountain, State Board Staff.
Keith Blanchard, State Board Staff.
Craig Jacob, Board Member.
Chris Leonard, Board Member.
Dick Lubeke, Board Member.
Thank you, Mr. Dr. Mittman. The audio recording of the July 26, 2018 meeting has been posted on the website and is the official record of the meeting. Ms. Stanfield, have you confirmed that the minutes are posted and are audible?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any questions? If not, may I have a motion to approve the recording of the July 26, 2018 meeting?
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion second. We have a motion second. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Craig Jacob, aye.
Chris Jacob, aye.
Yeah, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
The minutes are approved. The first item on the agenda is a status update for Arizona Summit Law School. Those representing the institution, please come forward. Ms. Stanfield, would you give us an update?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. Arizona Summit presented to you in July with the status of their current ABA appeal that's pending. And since that time, they have announced that they are no more fall, there are no fall classes scheduled. And because of that, I have requested Summit to come before you to provide an update of where they are in terms of where those students are going to, or what they are planned to do on the teach out, as well as they have moved to from their location on Washington.
One North Central.
And then they've relocated, is now into an executive suite.
To North Central.
Where there cannot be any classes. I know that they have been in conversations with ASU for a teach out, but I will let the school provide you an update.
Can you introduce yourselves, please?
Yes, I'm Peter Gopplerud. I'm the interim president of Arizona Summit Law School.
And I'm Ben Nielsen, outside legal counsel for Arizona Summit Law School.
Thank you. Would you like to give us a brief statement?
Yes, thank you very much. First and foremost, I want to reiterate what we stated in the July meeting, that our primary focus, since we received the June 8th decision letter from the American Bar Association regarding the school's accreditation, has been the well-being of the students. To that end, we've engaged in multiple actions to protect the best interests of the actively enrolled students, including one-on-one counseling with them regarding transfer opportunities, counseling with regard to visiting student opportunities, and as Ms. Stanfield indicated, ongoing cooperative planning efforts. I'll detail a little bit more in a minute with Arizona State University's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. The appeal to the ABA remains pending. We just learned this morning that we will be receiving a packet of materials from the ABA regarding the next steps in that appeal. Interestingly enough, several days beyond the timeframe in the rules for which we're supposed to be provided that notice. We have asked the ABA for approval of the teach-out, but due to the timing of their August session and the receipt of the letter and the work with ASU, that was not on their August agenda. We did, just prior to coming to this meeting, receive communication from the ABA requesting, directing us to submit a fully executed teach-out plan by September 4th to them. We had an opportunity to briefly speak with the managing director, committed to diligently working to get that executed teach-out to them by before that date. To that end, in the last 24 hours, we've had further interaction with ASU's leadership team and are closer to having an agreed-upon plan and agreement, and we'll be working diligently with them on that. To update you on the status of our students at this point, we have had 44 of our students have transferred to a variety of other law schools, including ASU, Chicago Kent, University of Idaho, University of Kansas, Mitchell Hamlin, University of North Dakota, University of Oklahoma, Seattle University, Vermont Law School, and Willamette Law School. 19 of the students graduated after the summer term, which ended after the last month's meeting of the board, and another 4 students are graduating following the conclusion and submission of grades for intersession courses that concluded last Friday. And my understanding is that those grades will be finalized today and students notified of the or confirmed that they are graduating. We have 5 students that are still pending transfers. There are 21 students visiting at ASU, Florida Coastal, and Texas A&M, and 3 students have taken a leave of absence. There are 3 others that we're still working with to counsel them on different opportunities. It's anticipated that the students who are currently visiting that I just noted would form the core of the teach-out program beginning in January at ASU on their campus. We also had last week a call with ASU and the Department of Education regarding the processing of Title IV financial aid funds for the students, and are expecting a response and clarification from the Department of Education hopefully by tomorrow with regard to that. Part of what will be requested in the teach-out plan is approval by the ABA to continue the accreditation of the law school through the life of the teach-out. That is necessary to ensure that the students are eligible to sit for bar exams in every jurisdiction of the country. We've been told by the ABA that they've had communication with the Department of Education, and the Department of Education has confirmed that they have the authority to do so, consistent with not only the ABA standards, but with the Department of Education regulations. We have, as noted, moved to a different location, and that location does actually have space, should we need it, for classrooms. They have space for a 50-person classroom, a 25-person classroom, and a 10-person classroom. We have been in negotiations with the landlord at 1 North Central, the primary location of the law school, for the last 7 or 8 years. Those negotiations have thus far not been successful, and as has been publicized in the last 2 days, the landlord has taken what we consider the draconian measure of locking us out of the building with regard to a 1-month rent payment that was not made, and pulled a $3 million letter of credit, which is substantially more than the 1-month rent. We have made the decision to access the space across the street so that we can continue to communicate with and work with the students and to do everything that we can to ensure that their best interests are being served. The closure of the old building by the landlord is not interfering in any way with our ability to assist the students who have transferred or are taking visiting classes currently. We have notified the remaining full-time faculty that they will be furloughed effective August 31st. We have notified them that should things develop in a different direction with the school, we will be reaching back out to them to continue to serve the school. We have also significantly downsized the administrative team at the school, but have sufficient staff in place and will continue to have sufficient staff in place to provide the necessary and appropriate support for the students between now and the start of the teach out and through the life of the teach out. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Can I ask first about the student records when they locked you out?
Our student records are all electronic, and we still have full access to all of our student databases, and we'll continue to maintain all of those databases.
Madam Chair, if I could clarify, if I could remind the board, we do have a $1.1 million bond for those students who are unable to transfer and have made cash payments. That would be available to them, as well as per your stipulated agreement a year or so ago on the renewal. They have been providing to us the electronic copies of the student records. And our last receipt of the records was...
Madam Chair, it was within the last 2 weeks.
Okay. Yes, we've been providing to Mr. LaMountain the enormous volume of student records.
Much appreciated.
So we do have that protection for the students,
but also for privacy for the students. There aren't any records that the landlord would end up.
No, accessing. No, no. Yeah. No access whatsoever for the landlord.
If they lost you out, do you have access to things like transfer paper in order to print transfers for students who are trying to transfer, anything like that? Or that?
Yes. No, no. We have access to that.
Did
yes.
Did you know that was happening then, that you were about to get locked out?
We, when the August rent payment was not made, we knew that that was a possibility. We didn't know that it was a sure thing by any means.
One other question: is there, based on everything that's going on, not making the August rent payment is kind of interesting based on everything you guys have put a strategic decision or?
It was a decision based upon the fact that we were not going to have fall classes. We were not going to have students actively enrolled, and the student the incoming revenue for the school obviously would have reflected that, and the plan was that because of the timing of the ABA appeal process still being uncertain, we had to look out for the students and focus on getting them placed elsewhere, and that was what our primary effort was throughout the time frame from June 8th when we received the notice up until today, literally.
I guess my understanding was the last meeting in July that you guys weren't going to admit new students, but I guess I never quite understood that we weren't teaching the students.
At that point, we had not made that final decision because we were still hopeful that the ABA was going to be more responsive than they have been. But it became clear not long after that we had to make some very definitive decisions in order to protect the students.
Can you tell the board a little bit about the cash position that your university has right now? I mean, do you have the ability to keep going for indefinitely, or
I I certainly wouldn't say we have the ability to continue indefinitely. We have the ability to continue to provide the necessary support through the life of a teach-out, certainly.
So you said you had 4 pending transfers, 21 visiting campuses, 3 on LOA, and 3 figuring out what their next opportunity is. So that's 32 students still in, like, limbo? Can you tell me, give me
now,
a little detail?
I wouldn't say in limbo, because we have the 5 pending transfers. We're expecting paperwork from this week, because it's our understanding that they're someplace where they could well have already started classes this week. What we're looking at really is in terms of the students, as of the end of the day yesterday, the last report that I have received from our folks, we have 21 students who are visiting elsewhere, and the 3 that we're still counseling, and then the 5 leave of absences. Those would be the folks that would ultimately be in the teach-out. It is conceivable that some of them may choose at the end of the semester to transfer if that is something that they're interested in doing and are able to do.
So I just want to be clear on this. Are you planning on doing any kind of teaching in the fall?
No.
Based on these numbers?
No.
These 28 students, 29 students that are still not certain of what they're doing.
No, but those students are, let me clarify, those students who are visiting, they're in class right now.
Okay.
They're taking class right now. The students who are have chosen to take a leave of absence have told us that they want to do that
right.
Because they're not comfortable in the situation this fall, and they're waiting for they've specifically said they want to wait until the teach-out starts.
Okay. Can you go in a little detail on what this adequate staffing is right now?
Right now, we've got the dean, the associate dean for academic affairs, actively working with students. Our registrar, our financial aid director, our library director, and our career services director are still actively working with students.
And the students will have access to what library now?
They have access to all the electronic databases. Yeah. They have access that the public would have at Arizona State University. We have worked with our library director has worked with their people for that, and they will have access through our sister school at Florida Coastal School of Law to their services as well.
Okay.
If I may, earlier you talked about asking to make sure that students can still graduate from Summit. Wouldn't it be in the student's best advantage if they're being taught out by ASU for ASU to grant them the degree versus Summit? Wouldn't that be
that? That would, but ASU's rules are such that the only way that you graduate from ASU is if you are actually an ASU student. The students in the teach-out will be enrolled technically as visiting students, and the degree will be from Arizona Summit Law School. And that's the normal process that would work at any law school under those circumstances.
If some of these 21 could be recent starts, they have quite a bit of their program left, and are some of them close to graduation?
There are, as I recall, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now, but as I recall, there are about 10 students that will graduate in December and then be preparing for the February bar exam. And there are, at this point, I think only 1 or 2 students, and I believe that they are included in the 3 that we're still counseling, that have fewer than 10 credits earned at this point.
So those 3 that you're working on, since school has already started at the other schools, they'll be sitting out this fall, so it will be...
It's unclear. There's a couple of places yet that have not started classes that they're looking at, but I would say more than likely those 3 would not be taking classes this fall. But I can't confirm that at this point.
So the students who are
taking the online classes. Your write-up said that you have gotten permission from the ABA to increase the cap on distance ed credits.
No. The ABA has increased its own cap on distance ed credits. We're not operating under any kind of special waiver. In the August ABA Council meeting, the ABA approved a change in the standards to allow up to 10 credits of the first year to be taken through distance education, and up to one-third of the total graduation requirements to be taken through distance education, which is in effect a doubling of the previous standard. And that, by the way, was effective immediately. So it's in effect now.
So the students who are taking classes distance ed for the fall, given those percentages, is it likely that they will have to make a decision to move to Florida or Texas or whatever to finish their degrees?
No, it's anticipated that the bulk, if not all of those, will stay here to participate in the teach-out come January.
So they're doing the distance ed, et cetera, for the fall, but the anticipation is that they will participate
correct.
In the issue.
Correct. And we facilitated this and encouraged these students who were interested in doing this to do so that they could stay on track towards graduating in the time that they should graduate.
So if the ABA doesn't find in your favor, then except for the students who are transferred, they would end up getting a non-accredited degree from Summit?
If the ABA were to not approve the teach-out and not approve, and obviously at the same time not approve the continued accreditation, that's correct. We don't anticipate that is going to be the result. At the moment, our primary focus to ensure that the well-being of the students is to get the fully executed teach-out agreement to the ABA, which would be considered by them prior to any consideration of the appeal. And I think that it's fair to say that if they grant the teach-out, that may well dictate what we do with regard to the appeal at that point. But I'm not ready to state anything definitive with regard to that, but if we have a fully executed teach out, that's the thing that's the most important at this point in time in the near term with regard to the students' well-being.
So I guess we'll have to wait until we hear more about that, because trying to figure out what will happen to the students if the teach out isn't officially approved, the students could continue to be visiting students through current rules, but then their degree would be from an unaccredited school, and then they couldn't sit for the bar in Arizona and some other states as well.
If that were to develop in that fashion, that is correct. If that were to happen, and that's the absolute worst case, we would be working as diligently as we possibly could to get those students accepted as transfer students to other schools so that they then would graduate from those other schools with the opportunity to take the bar in any jurisdiction. But based upon the interaction that we've had with the ABA, based upon just the phone call even this morning with them, despite the hiccups along the way with their timing and certainly despite the way that we have not had full transparent explanation from them over the last year and a half as to how we could what we needed to do to be found in compliance, despite all that, it's pretty clear to me that they want to do everything they can to ensure the best interest of the students as well.
And you're prepared to have your administrative staff continue to work and be able to fund them working?
Yes.
The completion of the last student who is scheduled to graduate.
Yes, we are absolutely committed to providing that any and all necessary and and appropriate support for the students through the life of the teach-out.
And does the teach-out go right to the end of when the last currently enrolled student should graduate? Are there any provisions to go an extra semester or two should people get behind?
Yeah, we're gonna make it the agreement read. In fact, that's one of the things that in the latest draft that we had sent to the folks at ASU, they suggested that we actually extend out the end date in the plan a bit to ensure that it covers any student should a student have a difficulty with a class that they have to repeat or something along those lines, so that it would cover them through the point in time that they do graduate.
You also have any other questions?
I don't remember. In July, were we talking about there was some testing for students and there were going to be some results in that?
Oh, they no. The bar results come out in. Then you're going to have to.
October.
Is that October?
October, yeah.
So, at the time that we were here in July, the students were, I think, actually just taking the bar exam that day, as a matter of fact, or had just finished it the day before. But those results won't be out until October.
Any other questions from the staff?
I'm sorry.
Do you have any other questions from the staff for them? Should we ask them to come back at the next meeting?
I will schedule them for your October meeting for an update.
I will be happy to be here and provide you, at that point, I hope, a very definitive report and confirmation that our students are making good progress and in a good situation.
And be sure that any communications you get from the ABA or the Department of Ed forward them to me.
Well, and as a matter of fact, the one that came in this morning, I will forward to you later this afternoon when I get back to my computer.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the College of Health Careers. Does any school come forward? And Ms. Santa, give us a summary, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. During our review of the 2018 license renewal application for the Regional Center for Border Health, staff had concerns regarding the recent actions of ABHES, the actions taken by Ed, and regarding the June 30th financial statements. So just to remind you, Regional Center for Border Health also owns and operates rural health clinics, the San Luis Health Clinic, which also is a training site for the MOUS Medical Assistance, and other entities such as the Main Street Cafe. At your May meeting, the board did approve the regular vocational program license by stipulated agreement that they increase the surety bond to $63,234 and to begin providing to us copies of student records quarterly, electronically, and to provide to you an update at this month's meeting. On August 14th, ABHES affirmed the change of location for the college, as well as vacated the show cause directive and extended the current grant of accreditation until February 20th of 2020, subject to submission of the individual syllabi for the medical office program, which is due by November 1st of this year. ABHES also placed them on outcomes reporting. We had also requested the institution update the catalog, which they provided to us and submitted to you. And here representing the institution is Lorraine.
Lorraine. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Lorena Sendejas, and I'm the campus administrator for Regional Center for Border Health, College of Health Careers. And with me is Alex Bejerano, and he is the Director of Public Relations for Regional Center as well. I'm here before you today, this morning, to give you an update on the stipulated agreement items for our college. I first would like to thank Kevin for all his help and guidance regarding all these agreements that we have to submit to you. We gladly submitted all our transcripts of our students from 2007 to current, 2007 is when the school opened, initially opened. I also sent all the electronic copies of the current student ledgers, and we are going to be doing that quarterly. Our next reporting date will be in October, and you would have those as well. As Terry did mention, we did receive a letter from the Accrediting Bureau of Health Education Schools, APHES, and they did grant our accrediting until February of 2020, based on me sending them a copy of the medical office specialist syllabi, which I did this morning. So once they receive it, and they will be sending us another certification notice. Do you have any questions for us or for me?
Has the bond been increased?
Yes.
The bond also, yes, and we did comply with that as well.
Just out of curiosity, why did it take so long to send the syllabi?
No, we did send it, except the one that I sent said consolidated, and they didn't want the word consolidated on the syllabus, so I just had to delete the word consolidated and resend it.
Okay. Folks on the phone, if you could keep your phone on mute, please. So just to recap, you're currently approved Department of Ed through Ed Zone or LOC alternative.
We are. I'm sorry, what was that?
You are currently approved with the Department of Ed through the Zone or a letter of credit alternative?
Yes.
And Ms. Stanfield, when would you like them to come back to give us the next update?
If there is negative action taken by APHES, based upon the submission that's due in November, it would be at that time. Otherwise, my suggestion would be perhaps at the next renewal, which is January renewal, I believe.
Yes, January.
So if there are, we could schedule it for the January or February meeting.
Okay. So any correspondence that you get from either the accrediting and, of course, anything from the Department of Ed for it to Ms. Stanfield as soon as you get it?
Absolutely.
And I will expect to see you in January or February. She'll send you meeting notes.
Madam Chair, I had a couple questions regarding the catalog that I can send to Ms. Stanfield.
Great, thank you. So she will forward to you some suggestions for your catalog.
Thank you so much.
And it would behoove you to review them if you have questions. Return the questions to Ms. Stanfield, and that will make your pre-approval go a little smoother.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. All right, the next item on the agenda is the Art Institute of Phoenix. If those representing the institution would come forward, and Ms. Stanfield, if you would give us an update.
Yes, Madam members of the board. The board had approved the license renewal for the Art Institute with the stipulation that they post a 2.043 surety bond and to continue to provide to us the student educational records of the students, which they have complied. I provided to you a progress report. As you know, they have stated their intention to close the Art Institute of Phoenix here effective December, the end of December this month. Kevin and Keith did go last week and met with the students to discuss with them the potential options that they had if they chose not to transfer, that they would have access to the student tuition recovery fund, and then we would be able to then petition the bond for monies to be returned back to the state, as well as maintaining the records. The institution has provided to us what they have given to the students, several options that they have available. I would like you to take specific note at this point in time, the online Art Institute of Pittsburgh online is no longer an option due to perhaps questions regarding the Middle States pending action. Some of the students could still take online at Argosy and other South University that are not closing. The Dream Center will continue after the closure of the Art Institute maintain Argosy University here. We are not the home state. The home state is in California, prepared by WASC. However, there is the Dream Center call center administrative center that is housed here. Of course, there are not any students, and there's no potential liability for the state in the case of closures going forward. If I could have Kevin and Keith give you a very brief update of when they visited with the students and tell you how that went last week.
Great. Madam Chair and Board, Mr. Blanchard and I attended last Thursday a nice session, and I appreciate Ms. Sharp and Ms. Walsh putting that together for us and us to come over and talk to the students. I would say there were probably about 25 to 30 or so that we had the opportunity to go in and talk about what the state does. We're a consumer protection. We're here to help them. Certainly gave them the options with the Department of Education about student loan discharge, and then talk to them about the Student Tuition Recovery Fund for the state, and handed out some applications, provided the campus with applications, talked to the Director of Financial Aid as well, gave them all of that information. The students were obviously concerned. At that time, which was last Thursday, the students had still, at that point in time, not been told the closure date of the campus, which is to be the end of December. So there was still some unknown with the students about what that looked like. They had not, at that point in time, been told that the school was officially going to close. We made it a point that day because we did have some information that we knew what their situation was, and we told the students quite frankly that if the Dream Center and or the Art Institute doesn't tell you what the situation is, we would the following day. So I know that a memo did come out. We appreciate that. Came out to the students. They have seen that, and it did talk to them about that, about the closure date. I think one certain concern that I think we could have the school address is of the options that are still available to the students, whether that be not the student loan discharge, but the transfer options within the Dream Center Art Institute area. One issue I think that the board should know is one of the options they had mentioned is the Art Institute of Las Vegas, which is a branch of the Art Institute of Phoenix. And the Art Institute of Phoenix will cease to exist at the end of this year. So I wanted to bring that to your attention to as possible questions.
If Slimoz will introduce yourself, please.
I'm Kimberly Welsh. I'm the Director of State Licensing and Accreditation for Dream Center Education Holdings.
Chad Garrett, Chief Financial Officer for Dream Center Education Holdings.
Connie Sharp, the Interim Campus President for Art Institute Phoenix.
Dr. Stacey Sweeney, Chief Officer of Academic Excellence for Dream Center Education Holdings.
Will one or more of you give us a brief update?
Sure. We are here today to provide you the update on the status of our students as it pertains to our closure. We are still working with all of our students regarding their options. We do have executed articulation agreements with Benedictine University, Huntington University, DeVry, which is a national agreement. Currently in process, we have articulation agreements with Grand Canyon University and University of Advancing Technology. ASU did reach out to us yesterday, and we have provided the contact information for ASU to the individuals who are putting together the articulation agreements. We have put together a program comparison that we will are passing around that shows the program alignment between AI Phoenix and the partner schools. We held a transfer fair yesterday as well, and the five schools previously mentioned, they were in attendance. We will continue to work with area schools to execute articulation agreements, and we'll hold a second transfer fair in September. We've also put together, and we're handing that out, an updated list of our students with the high-level detail is on the last page. Total active students, 309. Pending drops, 2. Our pending summer graduates, they will graduate in September, 35. And our pending fall graduates, who will graduate in December, 65. Students who have stated they will be transferring out is 48. And we are still working with 159 students who are still deciding. As students communicate their decision to us, the spreadsheet is updated. It is a living document. And while 48 students have indicated they are transferring out, not all have decided where, and as they make that decision, again, that will be updated. A communication was sent out to all of our students this past Friday announcing our closure date, and this announcement has seemed to provide, of course, the clarity that they were looking for and some calm for our students. We continue and will continue to keep our students as informed and as up-to-date as possible. Open communication is our goal. We also will continue to provide instruction and student support services until the closure date. We are and will continue to be led by an executive in charge, myself, along with our dean, Gil Mejia. And we are responsible for ensuring that students continue to receive quality instruction and support until the closure date. Faculty and staff are supporting and will continue to support students with academic advising and student financial services until the closure date. And in addition to the campus-based support services, we have centralized support services, which will also continue to be available to students to supplement the local services on the campus. Career services will be available to students for an additional 6 months after the campus closes via a centrally managed career services team. Our goal is to provide you with updated information. We will continue to keep you informed, and we are open for questions.
I have a question. Ms. Sharp, can you tell us, is accreditation going to cease in December, or will it be open-ended? Is there any chance that it's going to resurrect itself in the future?
For the Phoenix campus?
Yeah.
The Phoenix campus will be closing in December. If you're asking about where our students are transferring to.
Just the accreditation.
ACIC accreditation is intact.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That includes Phoenix and Las Vegas.
Yes.
Is there a parallel process happening in terms of a teach out in Las Vegas?
No, Las Vegas is open and accepting
students. And accepting students?
Yes. Yes.
So how does that work with the accreditation ending?
How does that work?
Yeah. In February of 2018, with the situation with ACICS, Dream Center Education Holdings submitted an application to WASC for AI Las Vegas to fall under the Argosy University campuses in California. That was approved at their February meeting. We have a letter from WASC that was dated in March that has been submitted to the department, and we are waiting for the U.S. Department of Education.
So they'll be recognized as a freestanding school.
It's under Argosy.
Under Argosy, currently, it would be a Argosy branch.
I see. Thank you.
I have such a fast close. December, pretty fast to do that. Is there any particular reason?
Yeah, it's the, quite frankly, it was the longest amount of time the parent could support an orderly teach out of the Art Institute in Phoenix and the other closures that were announced at the same time.
I have to admit, I was surprised and disappointed because people from the Art Institute have been coming before us for a very long time assuring us that Phoenix was healthy, so we kind of had the apparently false impression. Even though things were happening elsewhere and to the company as a whole, because the Phoenix campus was healthy and was going to be ongoing. So I was taken aback when I found out that it was.
The state of affairs of the Art Institutes is Phoenix was, I'd say, in the middle or the healthy end of an overall brand that was struggling. We look at, in our fiscal year 16, the Art Institute in Phoenix had 1,000 students. Ended our last fiscal year in June, and they were down to less than 600 students. With our best guess of a realistic plan next year, they would be below 250 new starts in an enrollment base, essentially hovering around 400. In order to reverse that trend, we would have needed what I would call a seismic kind of growth event, a double-digit growth rate in new students to kind of right the ship. Given the current state, we didn't see that as realistic.
Just one nonetheless, because we did keep getting those updates that gave us comfort that the Phoenix campus was going to be okay. So normally when schools see that they're having trouble, they stop enrolling, start doing the wind down. So this just, as she mentioned, just felt very abrupt and unexpected. Up to, yeah, undo history, just very disappointed. Is there a reason why the Arizona school could not have been taken under RFC like Las Vegas school is?
The answer is just in the current enrollment trajectory at the Phoenix campus.
So it felt even under RFC that wouldn't help. Is it possibly the name, the brand that maybe you're a little worried about RFC, that the things they were hearing? So you think going under RFC wouldn't have helped that trend?
That was not, we did not believe that to be the case. Like I said, the decision was based on the financial trajectory for the location. As the enrollment began to contract, obviously the facility, the ongoing fixed structure of the institution became more of a burden and more of a strain on the institution itself and the parents' ability to subsidize it.
Does Las Vegas have an online program?
Consistent with the Art Institute in Phoenix, they have a relationship with the Art Institute online for their ground students to take online coursework if they choose to do so.
I understood by read, it isn't an option for the ground students to just transfer fully to online this time.
Why is that?
The Art Institute of Pittsburgh has an online division that is on show calls in the States. Probably best not to transfer students to that while they're in that situation until it's resolved.
Can I ask real quick, too, what's the enrollment in Nevada so we have some kind of comparison then? If that one stayed, what is the size of that?
Nevada is over 550 current active students.
But that's less than 600 we just said this year.
We're at 309 today.
309 today.
Projections.
I did not read it, but what were the issues for the show cause for the online portion?
It's a combination of, frankly, the during the transition of new ownership, majority of some governance questions in addition to some overall just transparency relationships that we're working through right now.
Okay.
That's most of it.
And how do you feel about that being rectified or taken off show cause?
I'm feeling hopeful. I met with Middle States actually, and Brenda, because I was with you about 2 weeks ago. So we did meet with the staff at Middle States, and we're working towards resolving the issue. We have a report due in about a week, and then a visit in September with that.
So you have 159 students still deciding what they want to do. 48 that are transferring, but on this list, only 28 have a school designated. So really, it kind of looks like you have 179 students that are still trying to figure out what they're going to do, and we have about 5 months to get them situated. That's kind of alarming.
Yes, well, I will say that on a monthly basis, we do submit an updated report to the DOE, so we feel that given the communication that came out on Friday to the students, the transfer fair, that they will be moving forward with making decisions. I think previously that they just needed more information.
Okay.
I should mention the Department of Education actually held a webinar yesterday morning with a number of college universities asking for their assistance with helping us with transfer agreements. So we have begun to see the agreement there as far as the University of College getting in touch with advanced students.
What's the program with the largest enrollment? I know they have it in my notes, but.
Oh, that's a great question. I believe it's culinary, but I don't have that detail.
Well, that's a little concern because there's no transfer agreements in place. for the culinary?
Some students have shown that they're interested in AI Las Vegas.
Okay.
And we will be reaching out, as I said, to additional colleges within this area for articulation agreements.
Madam Chair, I was talking with the group yesterday and mentioned to them that perhaps they should reach out to Culinary Institute. It is not a degree. It's a diploma program, but it could be a viable option for the students. So I do encourage you to reach out to them. And granted, the students would not be getting a degree, but they could be
from the title form.
Yes.
Madam Chair, can we ask a question in reference to this?
The question I have, in terms of the students that have dropped, so based on those students that have dropped, when they drop, they will, at this point in time, potentially not qualify for closed school discharge based on 120 days prior to closure, and they would not be eligible for student tuition recovery funds from the state of Arizona. I just don't know what their drop dates are. Right now, with the closure of December 31st, assuming that's the date, those individuals that are not currently enrolled today, or and they're not allowing them to re-enroll, I'm just saying that there's an issue there that we may want to at least find out the drop dates of
sure.
those students, and then find out ways to communicate to those students through their email, non-AI email.
That's a smaller list than was provided to Ms. Stanfield and Mr. Blanchard that I sent out on Thursday night last week, and then we resent again yesterday. That's just a condensed version of that spreadsheet. So you should be able to, I would believe that would be on information.
All right,
be on
that sheet. I'll check, but just to point that out, that those students that have dropped are really in a different world than those students that are currently attending or continue to attend or get transferred.
These students who dropped on the quarter, they dropped because of the rumors of pending closure, do you know?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
On the spreadsheet, what is refused?
So we have a student acknowledgement form that just we're able to show that we have met with each student. We do ask a student to sign it. Some students say refused, and that's, again, part of the report that we send it to the Department of Education that shows, yes, we have, in fact, met with these students. And if this says refused, it just means they refused to sign the form.
Is that the form that says, I agree that I'll table that one to the school? Is that also why they were refusing to sign it?
My understanding is there's some, and I don't have it in front of me, but there's some print at the bottom that states that by signing this, you know, I would have to. It's really.
I can't.
You have the 5,000 tuition grant that you maybe give up to another institution. So really checking out those options and signing off.
I'm looking for it. It was on one of the forms that I had a couple of versions of it, and one of them stated that the student was agreeing that they would pay the school anything they owed. So I had the impression that it was.
There may have an earlier version, but that's
not the current version.
No.
Okay. We have an updated version.
Yeah, the one I just opened, I'm not seeing it on it, so maybe that was an earlier version. All right. Ms. Stanfield, do you have any additional questions for them?
No, Madam Chair.
Anyone else? The report that sent, you said, to the Department of Ed monthly?
Yes.
Is that also provided to Ms. Stanfield?
The first report actually sent to the Department of Ed. What we were finding, and we're not here, we walked up for weeks ago, but 2 weeks ago, things are asking to assist as far as the communication pieces. We have hired a new senior vice president to find some other affairs. The one program, the student might know, is coming back to, I should have heard, which has been planned for a number of years. And so what we found is that there was really some friendly issues with communication. And what we've been working on really is wholeheartedly is trying to make sure the communication is out to the right, all the right regulatory body, the right protocol, and the right order. So last week was the first update report from the Department of Education. It ensured that the states and our accrediting bodies, of course, the board chairs, received that communication first. The department received it last Friday. So we want to be able to hopefully use the same report, if that's the format for you all, every month, and we'll be able to.
Madam Chair, if I could, ask, based upon what Kevin brought up, and then doing a quick count on the drop on this list, there's about 12, give or take. Those students, again, depending upon when they dropped, there could be some obvious consequences for those students based upon eligibility for STRIFE and eligibility for the Federal Loan Forgiveness Program. So if you could provide us more information
sure.
and when those students dropped, then contact information.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
Again, sorry. Is there any communication to the students that are currently in there that may consider dropping after the end of this semester that you're currently in? Because those students, if they drop, your semester end when?
September 21st.
So September 21st, would that be the 120 days prior? Do the math. October, November, December. So potentially they would. Just, you know, again, we had that conversation with the students, and I want to make sure it's clear to them in terms of what a drop would do today in August versus what it would do in September.
Okay.
If they're in good academic standing, you give them an approved leave of absence after the next step of this end of this semester, but they want to take a leave of absence after September 21st, would that be approved? Because if STRIFE, they have to either be on a approved leave of absence or currently enrolled at time of closure. So
yes.
If they do the leave of absence, instead of waiting until December and spending more money on tuition, would that be an option?
That's not something that we've discussed, but I can certainly look at that.
Now, if you do that, that would sounds like that would help from the state perspective to give them protection under STRIFE and potentially under the federal leave. We want to explore that because a federal leave of absence to be official, the student has to be planning on returning. So that wouldn't need a Department of Ed leave of absence requirement because the state doesn't have such a requirement. So in your research of exactly what the student's options are, and you can't tell them, oh, you can't drop because you need to come another semester and incur more costs in order to protect you for these other things. But I think giving them the clear information that if you choose to take a leave of absence, that buys you protection for the state STRIFE, but find out whether it does or doesn't give them protection. If you taught me that, I don't know. But you want to make sure the students have all the information that's available to them to make the choice. And obviously, if they transfer, then it's a new issue, because if they transfer, then it's not a STRIFE issue and it's not a loan forgiveness situation. So it's only those who are choosing not to transfer are the ones who are at potentially could lose out. All right, anyone else have any questions? When will we ask them to see us again?
Perhaps October.
Well, we will get an update next month regarding where the current student actions
yes,
are.
Similar to the.
Thank you.
For example, you will give us in your report the updates of whatever they provide you, but we will ask them to come back before us in October.
We do not have, in September, we have the financing component.
Okay.
So we will
come all be in October.
Thank you.
Next issue is a complaint about Southwest University of Visual Arts. Anyone at the institution, please come forward and stand. Don't vote. Mr. Blanchard.
Madam Chair, members of State Board, at its meeting on June 28, 2018, the complaint committee reviewed this complaint, which included the following allegations. SUVA may have failed to allow for completion of institutional grievance procedure. Failure to respond requested for verification of charges and failure to adhere to financial aid requirements. The complaint committee requested the institution and KM to submit some financial information regarding the transcripts and to do a line item in reference to the handwritten information in the ledger, and also overview for KM and what he thought the tuition and fees would be. I've submitted the original report that the complaint committee has reviewed. I've submitted the information from KM as well as from the institution regarding their evaluation of the transcripts, but the ledger. I did speak with Julie Mayers, and she has indicated that she will send the official transcripts and diploma to KM. I forwarded his new address in Las Vegas. I'm here for the institution to answer any of your questions. It's in here somewhere. Thank you. Julie Mars, financial aid coordinator, Keisha Rucker, and I don't know if KM is here. Is he here? Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we ask them to give us information, do we have jurisdiction over this given the time frame? While she's looking that up, if you could give confirmation that you will be giving him his diploma and his transcript.
Yes, actually, they went out in the mail on Monday, and we sent them certified mail.
To the new address that
was
provided?
Yes, I'd asked Mr. Blanchard to get the updated address. The last one we had was in Arizona, and I wanted to make sure that they were going to the correct address.
Last week, did you receive them?
Not yet.
Pardon?
Not yet.
Since they went certified, someone has to sign for them. Would there be anyone there to sign for them? Wait for this decision quickly to come in. But I'm pleased to hear that those were sent. Thank you.
And once we get the confirmation back, then I can forward that, a copy of it, to Mr. Fletcher, so you've got it for your records.
The board met and had jurisdiction in the third call. Although this complaint was started prior to 2014, and there's a two-year, usually 2 years from after the pending, in this case, the student could not get the school's quality of grievance procedure and had to hire a lawyer to get the process moved. But speaking with Mr. Blanchard, it appears that the process was started in 2014. So okay. We're well within the group.
So in our prior meetings, we had expressed that we felt that your ledgers left a little something to be desired. So I appreciate that you gave this Excel update. It didn't fully clarify, however. I would suggest that you review your procedures and ensure that the way that everything is posted, that it very clearly explains what the postings are, like future financial aid, what does that mean? When you make a journal entry, you should have some more clarification, because those are not, future financial aid is not a common thing at all, and a journal entry usually has journal entry for something, gets a little more description. And I actually would like your assurance for the record that you will not be seeking the remaining payment that you felt that he owed and he felt that he didn't, and your ledger appeared to say that he didn't.
Correct. We there is no KM does not owe the school any money for his education.
Okay, great. Does anyone else have any questions they would like to ask? I like this meeting much better than the last meeting. And hopefully, if you make some improvements in your ledgers, we won't see you back before the complaint committee for other students, but we'll like to give him a chance to address. Make any statement? And you just state your initials. You don't have to say your name for the record.
First, I would like to say good morning to everyone. And thank you, Keith, for your work. This is the first time we've seen each other face-to-face. So thank you. I appreciate that. I am happy to hear the result thus far. I'd like to say that. This has been a trying process, and it's not something I expected to go through as the first in my family to graduate from college. But I'm glad it is coming to a resolve, I think. I want to ask, just for clarity's sake, just because questions are high, is there a definition between difference between diploma and degree?
You've earned your degree from the school, and you'll actually get a physical diploma in there.
Oh.
There are diploma programs and degree programs, mm-hmm. and just in the materials we had, they made it clear that they were going to give you the physical paper diploma, which you can hang on your wall, and they were also releasing the transcripts, which has the detail of the courses, so should you need that to transfer to additional higher education, or if an employer, sometimes the employers want to see your degree, the proof that you earned the degree, and sometimes they want to see the actual transcript to determine your qualifications for a job, so they have sent you both. And if a employer or another school were to send a request for confirmation of his graduation as transcripts, since he's showing no balance, they will be, the request will be honored?
Correct, yes.
So what I'm saying is that your count is back to the zero that we saw on the ledger that was there. They did submit one to us, and now was back to showing a balance due. That's why I wanted to clarify that it was zero. So at this time, it's stating for the record that you don't owe them anything. They have sent you an official copy of your diploma and your transcript, and if you fill out a form at another school or an employer to release that information to them, they will respond to that.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarity. And I apologize. I was not informed that it was coming to certified mail, so I did not know that. I know that. That would have been
Well, you should get when you get home, and then you should see. You should see the notice, then you'll have to probably go to the post office to pick it up.
Okay. Just thank you for the attention and time put to this. I can leave now and look in my family, I think.
Yes, congratulations. And for the school purposes, this was a painful process for us to go through all this, and obviously far more for the gentleman here. So I would like to discuss with the other board members what they feel would be appropriate grounds for disciplinary action to ensure that it's a clear message this wasn't acceptable and to ensure it doesn't go forward. So we have a few choices of how we can do it, and it's written in our report, so if you each take a moment to look at it so we can have a discussion, that would be great. And if you can ask our legal counsel what the process would be for creating a disciplinary action. Board members, any comments?
Let's
Seems like it's been a learning process for the school. I can't imagine that they would not benefit from the painful experience. I would think a letter of concern would be enough.
Have we had any other issues as of late, past 2 years?
Yes.
Yeah. For the same.
Yeah. Really would be mostly on page 6 would be 32, 30, 51, 10, maybe 14.
I actually highlighted 14, thinking that that was, in my opinion, what it felt like to me. 14. Do you folks agree with 14?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, I would make a motion that we send a letter of concern outlining that this complaint is an indication of grounds for disciplinary action based on 32.305.1.14, failure to follow published administrative policies, procedures, and fees of the educational institution. Question?
Second.
Do you have any other discussion? All right.
Can you suggest that they go back and start reviewing their records to make sure they find these before, for the next time it comes back, it would be more severe?
Yes. For a matter of protocol, is that pardon?
It's in the body of the letter of concern that are repeated the same thing.
So as part of the discussion then is to not become for the board for similar things, which is to say if a student has a valid complaint, you obviously are welcome to follow it through. But in this instance, it really had seemed both to the plan committee and to the board that this should have been resolved sooner, and the steps that he had to go through in order to get resolution were way too extreme, and this really could have been handled at this point years ago. All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor, aye, roll call.
Craig Jacob, aye.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Dick Lubke, aye.
Bob Mitten, aye.
Thank you, Dr. Mitten. I didn't mean to forget about you. All right, do you have any questions?
No.
Do you?
Now your time.
Yeah, right. I don't know how to say this because I don't want this to be a intended. I don't even know what the appropriate word is, but this cannot happen again. And it shouldn't. My father has passed away before he could see this degree. You say you guys need to learn.
Well, thank you for coming forward, and I'm sorry for your loss, and congratulations on graduating.
Can you guys hear me? Can I make a quick comment?
Yeah.
It's real fuzzy.
I just want to say, yeah, I'm sorry, you guys are a little bit fuzzy also. I don't know if it's possible to move the microphone a little bit closer. But just in reading through the complaint, I just want to make a point that for so many years, there was just no response until it got to this agency, and I just want to acknowledge the staff for being the group that actually did the job and to bring this to a resolution for this graduate. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry, who was that? Dr. Mintman?
That
was
Paul.
I thought it was Dr. Mintman.
Is that Dr. Mintman or?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sounded. Just because it was a little.
Yeah, that was me. That was Dr. Mintman.
Thank you. We'll take it.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
I feel like you're in the Himalayas or something.
All right, now have like a deep cleansing breath for the emotion of that last one. Our next issue is the discussion of possible action on the regular vocational program and degree granting license, current update on status of accreditation for Brighton College. Those from the school will come forward. And Ms. Stanfield or Mr. Blanchard.
Madam Chair, members of the board, as of September 2017, the Finance Committee approved the 2017 regular vocational program and degree granting license renewal for Brighton College. With stipulations that they maintain the $45,000 surety bond and to continue quarterly reporting. They have continued to submit the reports as required. During this period, or as of late, DEAC had sent Brighton letters in September 2017 and February 18 regarding areas of concern. Just so you know, the board was not aware of these letters. Often we are copied, but internal type letters where sometimes we are not. And in these particular letters, we were not. We then learned that in May, DEAC directed Brighton to show cause as a result of Brighton did not submit the part two of the change of ownership. And had not submitted, audited, or reviewed financial statements as required. Primarily, these were concerns due to lack of financial statements and change of ownership. Change of ownership, Ms. Eckford and I have discussed it. I have had several questions with the institution, and they have provided us with information. It is very confusing. I had at one point in time stated that because I believe that Mr. Zagnoni still was owner 45% of Trey and then still 50% in Brighton, that changed ownership to now a third. But I don't know that I quite understood. It could have changed. I am not sure. But I will let Mr. Petford describe this a little bit.
Okay, so based on the submissions by Brighton, they sent us an org chart last week along with an explanation. Thank you for that. So it looks like Learn Key and Trade Training were the 50-50 owners of Brighton. Mr. Zagnoni was a 45% owner in Trade Training. Trade Training dissolved, and now Mr. Zagnoni is a full 50% owner. So the ownership did go from one entity, which was Trade Training, to an individual 50% ownership. So your rule is triggered at a 50% interest in control or ownership. Because the entity, the legal entity, has changed at 50%, this should trigger a change of ownership with the board.
And normally, if someone fails to report, that would be an issue, but considering how complicated this was.
And it was very strange because I think what had originally happened, it had been reported, but I think what originally happened was I did not know about the trade training. I just thought Mr. Zagnoni had gone from a 22.5% interest to a 50% interest. So that wouldn't have triggered a 50% change. It was, less than a 30% change. So, but then when we found out that it was the actual entity that had dissolved and the entity has changed, you now have a change in ownership. So.
And I think I asked Ms. Rada last week, you explained to me, I asked about what happened to Lozada.
So I'm going to guess.
Was part of Trade Training?
Lozada was the other 55% of Trade Training, correct? Is that what happened?
Correct, yeah, Lozada.
And then Lozada's gone now and you've taken over what Lozada owned.
Well, Lozada still exists. It owns Sonoran Desert Institute, uh-huh. And I'm still a 45% owner in Lozada. Uh-huh. Trade Training is a DBA.
Of Lozada.
Correct.
Yeah, but now Lozada has nothing to do with
Brighton.
So
right.
It is a full 50% right. Change to Mr. Zagnoni.
Right. They still own Sonoran Desert Institute. They just pulled out of Brighton.
Okay.
Right. Bottom line.
Thanks. It was very confusing at first.
Bottom line is,
there's a 50% change, so.
But, if I'm not mistaken, then in sometime this year, your board determined not to transfer.
You had a 30-10-10 split.
With two others?
Correct, and that did not happen.
And that did not happen.
That did not. Was that part two? Was that part two of the change of ownership, and that's why it wasn't submitted?
Good question. Okay. It was something that was potentially going to happen, was just determined not to happen.
So who owns it?
50-50. Larky and Mr. Zagnoli.
And myself.
That's it.
Okay, and Larky.
I've always had that 22% because I was a part of
trade. So,
you just said Lernke.
Yeah, no, Lernke owns 50%. That has never changed. Lernke has.
They've always had 50%.
They've always had 50%. Right.
That's never changed.
And who owns Lernke?
There's a few people, yeah. Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right, and there was just like.
And now you could.
Yeah.
Right, and I had 22% before because I had 45% of the other entity.
So, for legal purposes of the board, you just need to know that the entity changed from Trade Key to Mr. Zagnoni.
So we need it.
And there's paperwork involved.
Yes, there's paperwork involved. Yes.
$500.
At the end of the day, yes.
Three
and a fee.
Four.
If there's paper and money involved, then you straighten that out.
We will.
It is.
We will.
I think we just need to know 50-50. We're good right now.
Ta-da.
So clarity has been reached.
Yes.
Yes.
And a plan has been made.
Yes.
And you will follow through with that plan.
Yes.
And we won't penalize you for not following through the plan earlier because nobody fully understood.
Right. Understood.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Well,
so you're having a site visit in October.
We do.
Correct.
So I think it would be best to have them come before us in January to give us an update, or is...
Yes, it's October 25th.
Yes. well done, though.
I remember that. So it'd be at least a month for DAC.
We probably won't know the results until January.
And in between, it's incumbent upon the institution to provide notification to the board whether or not the other agencies do. So if whether or not they are CC'd on the letter of communications with department or with the accrediting, you are required to pass them to Ms. Santo.
Mm-hmm.
And then based on the size of school, I believe, we are asking for an increase in the bond. Is that effective now, or would that be in January? All right. And let me get those dollars.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could explain. At the point in time that the Finance Committee reviewed the renewal, we did not have the financial statements. Then we received the financial statements within the last month or so. And then based upon the reviewed statements for tuition revenue of $1,035,833, using our surety bond calculation of 10%, we'll increase it to $103,583. And as well as Brighton does not participate in Title IV, even though that's our 10% regardless. Potential if Brighton, unfortunately, something would happen, we most likely would have a higher liability because the students would not be eligible for federal loan forgiveness. It could be potential, but that's our problem.
So I've asked for a procedural. In order to increase the bond in conjunction with doing a license renewal, and asking for, on a quarterly basis, the records, but not to appear before the board or not appear before the board. Okay.
So if there's issues, I mean, you'll automatically see them in January. Are you January or are you on the mind?
So they'll be reporting to us in January.
Before the Finance Committee. Anyway.
So the quarterly reporting being requested is to continue in the Finance Committee, but not to the full board?
Unless January, we will based upon DAC.
So for this point in time, they already are on quarterly reporting and they remain on quarterly reporting. And we are asking to increase the bond. So procedurally, do we have to put them on probation to request the bond, or can we just request?
You can do a stipulated agreement.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions before we go there?
Yeah. Will you be asking for student records?
Mm-hmm.
Then yes, stipulated agreement. That's usually the only thing that's about. They're October.
They're October. Oh, there he is.
They're on there.
First cycle.
Anyone else have any other questions?
Could you talk a little about your Q1 financial performance? In particular, under other income and expenses, you have a negative $50,000 each quarter. What is that representing, that negative $50,000?
Sean, I'll let you.
I
don't think we have because the financial review comes up in October, so I don't think we have the financials in front of us, to be honest with you.
Kevin.
Yeah, and we've actually changed CPA firms, and we've actually changed the accountant that we're using as well since Q1.
Okay.
We can address that, obviously, in October.
Can you give me some numbers on what your staffing is, like for student recruitment, how many people you have?
For admissions, we currently have three.
You only have three, okay. Yeah. And what about your administrative?
What's administrative total, Sean?
Four. And then officers? Officer salaries are in here too. That's representing how many people?
Maybe
student services as well. You have a lot of salary. I mean, I'm just concerned that you're going to be able to break even for 600 students. That's a lot of students just to break even.
Yeah, and actually, there's been a reduction in salaries, so you should see some of that in the upcoming P&Ls as well.
Yeah.
And we can send you, if you'd like, we can send you the most recent.
No, we'll wait for next quarter.
Yeah, because we'll have those at the financial review.
I think we just need to get June.
Yeah.
That will be reviewed by the Finance Committee next week.
Okay.
Any other questions? All right. Then I would like to propose a stipulation agreement with an increase in the bond to $103,583. A request to have quarterly records submitted, and the staff will explain the procedure for that, and remain on quarterly reporting to the Finance Committee. Do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Those in favor?
Craig Jacob, aye.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Nick Lubke, aye.
Paul Mittman, aye.
Thank you. So the motion is passed. You need to accept it.
Please,
sir. All right. Thank you. And the Finance Committee will see you soon, and we will see you in January.
See you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. The next order of business is a discussion, possible action on a regular vocational programming degree granting license, current update on accrediting status, unmanned vehicle university. Ms. Stanfield.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, at your April 2018 meeting, the board approved by stipulated agreement 2018 provisional degree granting and regular vocational program license for unmanned vehicle university. Stipulations were to maintain the 136-235 surety bond, to provide electronic copies of student records on a quarterly basis, and before you today regarding an update on the status of DEAC accreditation. As a reminder, they had been deemed not ready back in September, I believe it was in 2017. They were required to submit a revised SER, which they did submit it on April 30th, and on July 24th, DEAC, a new DEAC report deemed them not ready for accreditation again. I then asked Dr. Jameson what the next steps were, and she explained to me that they had a conference call planned with DEAC last Monday. And so and can provide to you an update of where it stands at this point in time.
I see Mr. Bush's house.
Hi, good morning. I'm John Weiner. I'm the provost of the university. On my left is Mr. Kevin Kelly, the co-owner, CEO, and president of the university. And on my right is Dr. Chrissy Jameson, the dean of academic affairs and research for the university. Although DEAC did deem us not ready at this point, we had two conference calls with their executive director and also the other person that was in charge of getting this report to us. Nan Bejda Ridgway told us, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase here, but she said she'd be glad to talk to any member of the board about what I'm going to say, is that we're actually very close. We corrected a lot of things in the report. There's still a few areas that we do need to clean up in the area specifically of strategic planning. Also, there were inconsistencies they found between our SIR submittal, our student catalog, and our website that we need to clean up. The other thing that they noted on the positive side was they commended us for our use of having a PhD co-instructor for classes where the true technical expert holds a master's degree and maybe has 20 or 30 years of experience, and he's teaching the course, but he now has PhD in a similar or related field teaching the course with him to ensure that that all of our courses have a PhD instructor in the class, and they commended us for doing that. Where the school is at with respect to students and our curriculum remains our strongest point. We're a technical school, and that's where we shine. We are not making any changes to the curriculum, but we are continually updating the courses because in this new area of unmanned and autonomous systems, the technology is changing rapidly. So we have our instructors update each course as new technology becomes available to stay current with what's out there, and we also update the courses with respect to FAA regulations because those are changing consistently as well. In terms of accreditation, we are very focused on achieving accreditation. We're fully committed to that. I'd like to turn some time over to President Kelly to speak to his thoughts on where we're at and where we're headed.
Thank you, John. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. Nice to see you again, Keith.
Nice to see you.
We certainly have made strides. This has been a journey. Certainly, our team has learned through each submission and received proper feedback, and I think that the team here has done a fantastic job in internalizing that feedback, coming back with improvements, and making sure that DEAC is fully aware of the status of where we stand. And I feel as though they're a partner in the process. And I think that is highlighted by Nan's willingness to speak to any of you here today with regards to the steps the team has made. And we're fully committed at the ownership level to continue to invest in the university until we receive the accreditation. We're excited about certainly the field. We remain committed to developing not only the curriculum, but also the student body. And I think the accreditation will only make that a stronger possibility for us as an organization to achieve our vision and mission. I want to commend both John and Dr. Jameson for their tireless efforts in taking a subject matter that is certainly new and putting together a outstanding program that is on the precipice of being accredited.
Okay, and if I could just follow up with a couple more notes. In terms of our student population, one of our strongest areas is the people that are wanting to become drone pilots. Everybody wants to become a pilot and get into the business and start to earn money with these systems, whether they're doing real estate photography or agricultural inspections or building inspections across the entire gamut. We've graduated 31 pilots this year. We've also put 11 people independently of those 31 pilots through our FAA Part 107 exam prep course. Students will come and take that course from us. It's a short course, and that prepares them to go and take the FAA remote pilot exam. We've had a total of 22 registrations in our credit-bearing programs in 2018. Our numbers have been somewhat down. We've been pretty much heads down focused on accreditation and trying to do the continuous process improvement that we need in order to get there. And that will continue to remain our focus, along with making sure that our academics that are delivered to the students are first rate and up to date and current. Thank you.
Anyone else have questions?
Probably more comments. I ran through the DEAC report, the last one. And when you've come before us before, I think the feedback we gave you is consistent with what they're telling you as far as you have a lot of conflicts in your documentation where it says one thing, one place, and I know we've done a lot of, if you will, free consultation on that. You may want to really try and find someone who is that detail-oriented to help continue to be an issue for you.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what I was going to do.
Question.
When do you expect DEAC to get back to you with a decision? Is it on their calendar for
the
next meeting?
Well, we received the not ready end of July, and so we've now spoken to them about the next steps. So the next steps, you get a third sort of try at the deemed ready readiness assessment. So we have another 6 months to revise the SCR based on these latest feedback, which you know, like I said, the informal discussions with them have been really helpful and been very, very reassuring in that, you know, that we're very close, that these things are very fixable, and they even offer to sort of, you know, informally review them kind of thing. So we feel like, you know, there's something that we can definitely do and move forward with.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So wait. Hurry up and wait. Could be worse. Could be the Higher Learning Commission. Sometimes you're pregnant for 5 years. So.
We certainly are an active participant in the process, and so the good news is that DEAC has you know, offered and we've accepted, you know, a meeting to continue that process with them prior to the formal submission. And so that you know, we feel that we are working with a partner in order to get across that finish line rather than a necessarily accrediting body that is not supportive.
Great.
Have they given you a definitive date to submit the new SCR?
It's
6 months from the July 24th.
Okay, so
that's
January 24th?
Yeah.
January 24th, right.
Obviously, we can submit earlier if we finish earlier, and obviously that's the goal, but if it, you know, if it needs to be.
That's the latest
date.
The due date, right.
And the other thing I'd like to mention as part of our commitment, there's a DEAC workshop that's coming up in October in Scottsdale. We're sending two people, Dr. Jamison and myself, to that workshop so that we can interface with DEAC directly prior to them actually coming and doing a site visit, get more knowledge on what we need to improve on.
When's the site visit?
Well, so the third review is actually an in-person review. They actually come, and that's where they do the review, is actually in person. So the third review of the SCR is actually in person. So that occurs with just a couple of staff members in person.
They actually
come.
The other one have a meeting.
January 26th.
It's not exactly that date. You submit the SCR by that date, and then they schedule
it.
You know, like that's a month. She said usually a month or two.
30 to 45 days.
Yeah. And then they schedule a visit.
Right.
And the way we understand, two people will come out. It'll be Nan and one other person, a technical person. They will sit down and they will go through any additional feedback they have on our third SIR. They'll inspect things closely, but not as closely as the full team. If we pass this third review, then they'll schedule a full team, which I understand will consist of about six or seven people to come out and do a deep dive into. Our processes, review our academics in depth. And
one other thought I had too is when I went through the DEAC report, in their charts, you know, sit there and say if you've met, person met or not met. On some of them, It would say, like, all of your X's were in the yes column, but the note said partially met, but there was no notes underneath it about why that was marked as partially met, so I would get clarification.
Yeah. Those are part of our continuing conversations to try to get clarity on that, because that confused us, too.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a few things. First, tagging on Dr. Butt's comment, the number of items that we brought to your attention for you to fix, that was a lot. And to show administrative capability, it really does behoove you to go fine tooth comb through your stuff so that when DEAC comes out, if they feel like they're consulting you and, you know, teaching you how to do everything, that's not going to give them or anyone else the impression you have administrative capability and you're ready to run the school without somebody, you know, propping you up.
Sure.
So going to the workshop, I was very pleased to hear that you're going to that and ask for clarification so that you're not surprised at the end of the 6 months of what's going on. And I reviewed the information that we had asked you to change, and I still have three things that still need clarification, which I guess 3 out of 28. Odds are getting better, but I would have liked to have seen them all done. This is a minor one, but on the refund policy, there isn't any statement that says how you're defining a week, and most schools would just say a partial week counts as a week. It's sort of like when you have to say if you're rounding up or rounding down type of thing. So if they are there for 10 days, is that 2 weeks or is that 1 week? Typically it would be two, so you just say a partial week counts as a week. And your staff policy, it still just doesn't make sense. I don't know how you can possibly do your staff policy. And staff is a very, very big deal. And you say that you evaluate in the middle of the course. For the instructors, certainly would be evaluating, you know, people showing they're struggling at any point in the course. But for staff, that needs to be a definitive place that you are drawing the line and saying every 15 weeks, end of every term, whatever the case may be, and if it's if you're trying to say that you're doing it just once midway of the program, which it wouldn't be behoove you to do that, but you need to clarify. So just having staff policy says you're checking in the middle of a course, just it just doesn't work. Even though you're not Title IV eligible and you're still going through accrediting, the Department of Ed does have very clear explanation of staff, and if you followed their rules, you would certainly be in compliance. And it's, you know, they have step by step telling you you have to state how you handle this, and it will make it, I think, easy for you to figure out. And then you still have, it was previously in catalog on page 17, and now it's on page 16, inactive status. I can't mesh this with the refund policy. The student basically just disappears, they stop submitting anything, and you're not kicking them out of the school, but you're also not providing any refund, so they just stop participating, and it doesn't trigger the refund policy. How can that be? You have to have some standard to say that it's at some point they're not enrolling. Could be that you say they don't have to go through the entire re-enrollment process if that's kind of onerous. Maybe it's easy to get back engaged, but if they stop participating, you need to do something about that. And then a new question, so maybe I just didn't notice it last time. On discounts, you say you offer a 50% off tuition to military veterans with an approved DD-214. I'm not sure what that term means. What is an approved DD-214?
A DD-214 is the official term that the government gives
you. I know that part. I just don't know what approved means. Because you can have the DD-214 can say that you were honorably dismissed.
You mean an official?
Like, yes. Yeah, just what does approved mean?
It means it has the stamp on it.
A stamp, okay. Would other people know that approved means it's an official document?
We can change the wording on that.
But if it's approved or not, I think official.
I think official.
Yeah, if you could put official, that would be great. I think we would know what that means. And then a question on your book supplies and fees. You have book supplies and fees are not refundable if received by the student and open, but in your, I guess the question is, well, what if they're received and unopened? Can they be returned? So is that really what the point is that, you know, unused, unopened supplies can be returned?
In terms of the books, the students purchase the books independently of the university, with the exception of We encourage our instructors to try to find current books that are that have current technology in the novel program. And our subscription allows us to allow the students access to those textbooks. And so there are cases where the cost of the books is going to be less than the maximum cost that we put in the student catalog. In terms of the other fees, the only fee that we have, well, I shouldn't say the only fee, but the biggest fee that we have is a lab kit for actually building a drone. And when the student purchases that, obviously, if it has been completely unopened, I think that we would be acceptable to issuing a refund if it was returned unopened and unharmed. If it's been opened, because there's sensitive electronics in there, it's difficult to take back any electronic.
That's fine. I just want to make sure I knew what it meant. It's just worded a little differently than what you were saying. Usually it says unopened materials can be returned for a full refund. And just because it says received by the student and opened, well, I have to have received it to open this. I just, the whole thing, I just,
need to
sure
clarify that.
It would be easy to use more standard language and just say, you know, unopened, undamaged, you know, however you want to word it, just so it's a little bit clearer. That would be lovely. And that was all I had. Oh, I have to keep not hitting that. Sorry. That hurts so much ears when I listen to that. So I think that we don't need to take action on that, correct? So it was just really an update?
An update. Based upon the DEAC timeline, they're out in 6 months. If the SER is due in January, then they'll be out in February. February 1st, the renewal is due, so we'll be back before you automatically in April.
Okay, so we don't need to ask them to do anything else other than any information that they get there to forward to you. So
correct.
Anything you get from DAC.
Out of curiosity, they're under a stipulated agreement on last year's renewal. Under that agreement, they have a bond calculation of $136,245, which I think is $5,000 more than what the bond calculation is for this term. You also have them reporting all their educational records back to the board, and you have them returning to the board after the DEAC visit. So would you like me to remove any of that or change any of that?
Leave it standing.
Leave it standing as is.
Still an ex officio.
I would have to redraft it for this year, so that's just why I'm
asking. Okay.
We just did that one.
Are you good then?
Okay.
Never mind. We are good.
Oh, and we'll see you back as regularly scheduled programming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all your help.
Thank you.
Good luck and enjoy the seminar in October.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
The next item on the agenda is the conditional vocational program license application for phlebotomy training specialists. Who can come forward? And Ms. Stanfield.
Madam Chair, members of the board, phlebotomy training specialists are seeking a non-accredited vocational program license to offer a phlebotomy training program. ETS is also licensed in several other states, Utah, Colorado, California, Oregon, Washington, Michigan, Idaho, Ohio, Minnesota. I am not aware that any of these states have issues or concerns with you. Here representing the school is Brian True, owner, Monica Sanborn, I believe is on the phone, and your board member lead is Mr. Luke.
Welcome. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Sure. Brian True. Appreciate you guys having me, Madam Chair and board. You want me to give you a quick history or? Sure. Started the school February 3rd of 93, 2 weeks before my 18th birthday at the advice of my uncle. And it was just a novelty thing for the first 5 or 6 years until it kind of started to take off. In 96, I started drawing blood for the International United States Olympic Committees at all the Olympic Games. Kind of parlayed that skill set into more and more schools. And today we operate 24 schools in 10 states.
You say before your 18th birthday?
2 weeks before my 18th birthday, February 3rd of 93. I had no idea what I was doing.
Good. Shall we begin? All right. Well, I have a few questions. I think the first place I want to start is your financial statements. The ones that were submitted, are they a consolidated statement over many locations, or is it just for Arizona?
Affirmative. That's for the USA operation. So our financials are a little bit skewampus. Let me explain. So California doesn't allow any commingling of funds. So my California operations have to be a sole separate entity. So they can't bank with any other location. Other states have that same requirement.
Uh-huh.
So I have three operational entities. USA's operations is what this is speaking to. So this is Denver, this is Colorado, Minnesota, Minneapolis, and Ohio.
Okay.
And then, of course, Arizona, we have zero revenue yet, so.
Okay.
Right. So those are just those four states. So we have 24 locations. It would just consist of those five.
And it's not an audited statement. It's a review.
Correct.
And you're not... Whoever's doing the statements, they're not even listing any kind of deferred revenue or accounts receivable. Are you getting, you have nobody that owes you any money?
No one owes us any money. No. So, and the class is 4 weeks in length, so by the time class starts and class ends, we have no AR at the end of the month. So if students don't pay,
right.
They're either refunded, hey, I'm dropping, I'm done. We just refund them, whatever the case may be, but we have zero AR.
Nobody owes you any money?
No.
Craig's very interested in learning more about that.
Of course, aren't we all?
Currently, it's important to note, you know, people look at the stability of, and we're doing the same process in Pittsburgh as well as a bunch of other states right now, Pennsylvania, but it's important to note that operationally, we're happy to share our other financials from the other, it's all one and the same, all the ownership's the same. It's just like we're liquid for around 1.2 million right now. So,
right. Okay. Financials out of the way. Who does your marketing? Who does your brochures and your website? Do you have an outside firm or somebody on the inside of your company that does that?
So our website is managed internally. And we've got a programmer that programs, you know, website changes and adds things. It's become a little bit convoluted over the years because every state has different requirements they require to be posted and published on the pages. And so now that we're a USA operation, not just one state, we have, you know, the main page, and then we have sub-pages, and that correlates to the state. So at that point, we say operate, you know, approval to operate through this organizational entity. And so, but that's an internally operated website, as well as our back-end administrative system. Everything's internal.
Okay.
Right. And then as far as the marketing is concerned, Jared Prazen does our pay-per-click campaigns and manages those. And that's strictly our entire advertising is search engine, just SEO and pay-per-click. The brochure that's in the booklet, I don't know the last time we printed that. We just don't do print advertising anymore.
All right. Well, there's this is not a grand jury, so we're not looking to hang anybody, thankfully.
Sure.
But I would say whoever wrote some of your material has majored in some very interesting language that I think you would we would like to see changed. More hands-on training than any other school in America.
In the United States.
In the United States, that would not include Costa Rica or Colombia.
So we did a survey of most every school in America, and asked them how many draws they performed for their internal class students, and subject to that information, we placed that on our website.
Okay,
but you can back
so
up.
Absolutely.
I think with right now your syllabus calls for 19 hours of lab. If you did 10 draws every hour for those 19 hours, that would be 190 hours or 190 draws.
Correct.
Per student.
Mm-hmm.
There are schools that are, their programs are much, much longer.
Mm-hmm.
And they also include externship.
Correct.
Which only your California schools do. I think you might have a hard time substantiating it.
Yeah, with the externship, I'd concur.
Okay, so next one.
If it's based on, you know, actual
Other than California, they only have externships in California. Right. So all the other schools. So
based on their 19-hour class time, we do this many sticks compared to other average 19-hour segments of other schools. They might do more, but
there says more hands-on training than any school in the United States.
Right.
And
you're right.
Internships are considered to be part of the hands-on portion of the program.
Tough to compare when you
Our website marketing guy, the marketing guy is very creative and very, you know, I don't want to say pushing the envelope, but obviously he needs to revise his commentary there.
Creative will get in front of the complaint committee.
Yeah, right. Can I elucidate on that externship comment there?
Sure.
So, you know, when I started this 20 years ago, we did them all over the country. And then we started finding problems with the externships. So we sent one student out to an externship site, and Keith came out and did a site review, and I talked to him about this, but it's become a huge problem. Even in California, there were 6,600 web externship sites. Now there's down to 600. There's no requirement for sites to participate, and there's so much contrary information given by the phlebotomist on staff. Some people we send to externship, and they get one draw. Because they can't predict how many clinics or people are going to walk through the clinic. Other externship sites, they go through and they did 50. California, we were subject to multiple lawsuits for students who said we were discriminating against them because they had to drive 2 miles further to their externship site and got 6 less draws. So, you know, after surveying close to 10,000 of our previous students who had participated in the externship, about 1,000 responded to the externship email and gave us the feedback that, yeah, if I had to do it again, I wouldn't do it again. It was a waste of my time. I could have done more draws in class. You guys so closely replicate the externship opportunity in class. Why would I bother to go out and do it?
Well, that's fine. We're just looking for puffery because if you say this and then a student comes in and says, they're saying more hands-on training than any school in the United States, I happen to know someone in North Dakota who does more, so that means that this is not true, and then we're going to have to hit you with false advertising. So you have to make sure anything you're saying, you absolutely positively can back it up, and on an ongoing basis, it has to remain true.
It's going to be easier for us to change the commentary than continually try to provide proof.
That would be my thought. Did you in one of your things say that you have done draws on every continent?
I have.
Okay, so now someone else had said that one time that they had students in every continent, and they could not say they had anyone in Antarctica.
Yeah.
But since you specifically said 7, I was going to give you a pass to say you really have done it.
I have.
Okay.
329,500 something at this point. So.
Antarctica. Can't count penguins. Okay. So.
I did sharks on Shark Week once, and I've done all kinds of draws on animals and humans and crazy stuff.
So on the in the brochure, hundreds of thousands of students taught. So 100,000 students is a lot. And you use it plural, that now you're into the 200,000 students taught.
Or more.
Again, this is a commentary issue that needs to be looked at with our marketing guy.
Well, it's more than commentary. It's misleading. And so I one of the stipulations that I'll be suggesting for you to consider to accept will be that has to be withdrawn.
Even if I've got 100,000 student records?
Then 200,000 because it says 100.
I don't.
Okay. If you're willing to submit those to the board, you could get us electronic copies before the next meeting.
I think it'd be easier just to change it as opposed to providing the information.
I think you're.
When I talked to Keith, I'm the guy who says, "Hey, look, what's easiest? You know, oh, you're not happy with your class? Here's your money back." And I'm that guy.
Some of us weren't really good at math, but some of us have done just enough math over our careers to know that is a gross exaggeration.
For students?
He's on the phone. If you could put your phone on mute, please.
Your pro forma says that you hope to do 200 students in a year.
How are you doing? Is it yours? I'm making that. Okay.
Could you put your phone on mute, please?
Could you make it on mute?
Hello? Mute your phone. Thank you.
To get to 200,000 students at 200 students a year, even if you had a lot of schools.
Even if you started at 18.
So I have 35,000 in California in 5 years.
Well, 35,000 is not 200,000.
No, I'm just saying. You said it's a gross exaggeration to have hit 100 in 25 years. I mean, there were years in Utah I did 1,100 a year. There's been years in Colorado we've done 1,600 to 1,800. I don't know if it's a gross exaggeration. I'd venture to say we've hit the number or very close.
You've hit 200,000?
No, 100.
Okay.
So I don't think it's a gross exaggeration. I think we need to alter the language.
No, I think 100 to 200,000 is gross. It's not like...
Double your career.
Right, I see what you're saying.
I think you're saying the way you worded it,
right.
Plural.
Yeah, and I got to know how to change the brochure, and I can do that.
Yeah, I can change the brochure. Okay, well, you...
No, you are
going
to change
the brochure? Sorry.
Yes.
I apologize, Dick. I am going to change that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The very next, it's part of the same sentence, millions and millions of blood draws. Again, those are really large numbers,
mm-hmm.
and... There's a way to write this that will give the reader a much more clear picture that you're good at what you do and you've done it a lot.
Without using the statistics.
Without using that sort of language. So I would...
And on that, I think we took the number of draws times the number of students we've calculated that we'd had over the life of the school. So it wouldn't be millions and millions, but I'd venture to say... It's inconsequential, right?
Yep. Whatever you say, you have to back up. So.
Right. I'm getting the point here.
I think he's really looking for the explanation.
Thanks, Dick.
And have a check for the cycles while they're at it.
Okay.
Yeah. Tell me about arterial blood draws.
What do you want to know? You want to know how they're done?
I want to know why it's in your brochure. It's not in any of your course syllabus. And I want to know...
The brochure is a universal brochure, so we send it to California students as well, where they do learn about it. So, again, like I said, the brochure, when I saw that it was in here, when Monica prepared it and sent it in, predominantly she sent it in because she wants to be forthright, give you all the information. But we don't print brochures anymore. We don't hand out brochures anymore. We don't do the brochure thing anymore. So it's basically for California students. It was created for California students, essentially. And then we've subsequently submitted it, you know, to other states until we stopped doing it a couple of years back. But, yeah, that would be a California-specific thing.
Okay, so the syllabus that you sent us, is a Arizona syllabus?
Correct.
Okay. So, but going through your website and looking at some of the material you've submitted, it seems to me that even though it's mentioned in the brochure, I don't get the impression that you're actually teaching it nor demonstrating it.
Well, we can't.
I'm wondering why it's in your materials.
So it needs to be taken out of the brochure if we send that brochure to Arizona students. And then as far as the class is concerned, you don't practice arterial blood draws. You don't practice them in California. You don't practice that period. That's not a practicable, that's not something you'd ever practice in the clinical setting. Arterial blood draws are controlled setting, you know, under the scope of respiratory therapists would help you do your first one. We do show a video in class of what one looks like as part of our curriculum, but yeah, that's not something the students would ever, no student would ever get to practice that.
So we're in agreement that that's probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah, this brochure needs some work.
All right, what's the average class size that you have for most of your schools?
So Westminster in California is our number one school, Orange County.
It's your what school?
Number one school that we own and operate. It's 30, we have three classes there. And there's usually 30 to a class, so 90 a month at that particular campus. Colorado, Denver South might be 22. Arvada North might be 16. Salt Lake City might be 15. Boise's 12 to 13. It just varies across the board, predominantly because of just sheer population numbers.
Sure. So if I have 19 hours of lab, which is when you do your venipuncture, and I'm a student, how often am I getting stuck by another student?
So you do a little bit of trade work. You stick me, I stick you. That's pretty common in most lobotomy schools. And then we have what are called friends and family nights, where students are allowed to bring in their friends and family and coworkers and cohorts and the board and whoever wants to come in and get poked. So Danica Loveridge, 6 months ago, came through class, brought her friends and family in, and did 293 draws. Just one every 4 minutes. She just had her family just stacked up there for 20 hours, and she was knocking out.
Okay.
Mind you, those draws are replicated like the clinical setting. When we got rid of the externship, we brought the clinical setting into the classroom, so we use...
And I understand. That's perfectly appropriate. And I would submit to you that using the word unlimited blood draws is probably not a term that you can deliver on. I don't think you can deliver on unlimited. And if I'm just the average Joe, most of the people here are school people. They've operated schools long before 1993. I guess we're showing our age. Unlimited will get contested at some point by someone who says, I was in a small class that was not in Westminster. I was in Provo, Utah. We only had 3 kids in our class, and they got tired of sticking me, and you promised me unlimited blood draws, and Mom, Grandma, and the whole clan couldn't come down on Tuesday night, and you couldn't deliver on unlimited blood draws. All right, so we've got that out of the way. Hundreds of thousands, millions and millions, unlimited, and arterial.
Fire the marketing guy.
On your, how you're, right. Just keep doing all the good stuff you're doing. But whoever's doing marketing, you need to rein them in, make them more conscious that they can write things in a way that still tell a really great story and a real positive story without drifting into the undeliverables.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'm particularly interested in your national exam. In the state of Arizona, phlebotomists do not have to be licensed. They can choose to be licensed, but they don't have to be.
You mean certified?
We don't have a regulatory body that actually issues licenses to phlebotomists. They
right.
are not regulated health.
Right, okay.
Okay. So you're going to charge up front a national exam fee. And I'm curious how that works. If I drop out of school and you've already collected my exam fee, do I get it back?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in your refund policy, it says books, supplies, and exam fee. It says that the school will refund $100 if it's not used. If used, no refund. So really, I don't know where that $100, where do you attribute that to? If I have unused books and I don't take the national exam, why am I only getting $100 back? Books and equipment supplies is a $100 charge. National exam fee is $100, that's $200. But if I don't use any of them, I'm only getting $100, I'm only getting half back. Why?
I don't have an explanation for you.
It needs to be changed.
Your vision.
Somehow it's not.
Yeah, there's a disconnect there. You hear that, Monica?
Say full refund, you're done. But you lump those things together, and then said you'll give back $100. Then we looked up what you're charging. You're charging $200.
Right.
You're not calling the marketing guy now, are you?
Okay. I just called her back.
Do you want me to chime in on that?
No, we just need to change it. Less is more. I'm learning quickly.
Okay. On your you're asking students to pay for all their tuition before the end of the last day of class. What happens if I come to the last day of class and I haven't paid you?
So we finish everybody. We train everybody whether they're paid or not. They just don't get their certificate until they're paid in full.
But I'll get it if I pay you 2 weeks later.
Absolutely. Or in some cases, Monica and I can attest, a year later, 2 years later. We have a real flexible remedial training program. Students are allowed to come to our class as many times as they want or need to free of charge once they've paid in full one time.
But didn't you just say earlier that no one owes you money?
Yeah, it's highly unlikely that they'd get to the end of class. I mean, I can tell you right now, I don't think a student has not finished and paid. I mean, it's very inexpensive, the program. It's not like, you know, they're taking out student loans and things like that. It's just cash pay. It's a card, and charge the card, and that's it. And they'll call in and say, hey, it's the last day of class, and we'll hand them the iPad in class. Here's the payment system, and they'll just finish up their payment there.
Right. Okay. So 92% of your students pass the national exam. What percentage of your graduates take the exam?
Probably 99%.
And
it would be a very, very educated guess to say 99%. Yeah, I mean, we rarely have a student that says, oh, you know what, I'm not interested in the national exam. Most of them are seeking that from the ASCP or the AMT or the NCC or from the NHA. One of the certification bodies, they're seeking that. So,
okay. And so the 92% is being quoted as the highest of all schools in America. And is that backed up by which agency?
The NHA. So our pass rate, they sent us a PDF and said, "Here's the pass rate for average schools or for all the schools, and you're at the top of the pack." Now, the struggle we've got is that the NHA. This is divesting, you know, a little off topic, but they're changing their exams so frequently and putting poor test questions on there. And having served as a subject matter expert for every single certification body in America myself, they're really struggling with correlating their exam questions to curriculums. So everybody's pass rate in America is tanking. So they're allowing. Go ahead.
I'm not so much concerned about whether you're dropping to 89% as much as I am that you're holding yourself out to be being the highest. And so it just begs the question, if, let's say, Trish's daughter decides she wants to go to your school, and Trish goes and asks that agency, will they have a listing of schools that shows you at the top of the heap?
Again, it has to be substantiated, and if it changes, so let's say you're high right now, but
so this is
someone else succeeds it, you have to take it off.
Right. So, it's easier to change it than it is to continually substantiate it.
Yes.
Yeah, so change pass rate.
You know, you could stay, Brian, you could stay with the 92% if that's your rate, that you're entitled to hold that out to the public if that's your rate. Just be sure that when you add the word, the superlative, that you're the highest.
That the NH.
Be sure that you're the highest.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then you should. And if it changes,
and it's, well,
like the Board of Nursing changes their rankings of nursing completion rates twice a year. One period of time you might be number one. Next time you might be middle of the pack. All depends on the cohort of students.
Right.
So if you're going to use the word highest, I would suggest to you that you have to know for certain that you can back it up.
Again, I think I'd defer to the marketing guy.
I would agree with you. I would also add a caveat that if you're going to use percentage, that you make sure you cite as of what time. Because you know, if you're 92 and then, you know, 6 months later you're 89, then it becomes the same issue.
What's his name? Yeah, good counsel.
Okay. I don't know if this is a potential problem or not. When it comes to uniforming, you've made it possible for students who maybe can't afford scrubs to come to class in regular street clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Those that have scrubs or can afford to have scrubs can do that. You're very flexible on how you're allowing kids to come to school. I'm a little troubled, though, that they can be dismissed from school for inappropriate attire and not get a refund. So if I don't like your attitude, I can just say, well, I don't like the skinny jeans that you're wearing, and you're out of my school, and according to what you signed here in this enrollment agreement, I don't have to give you any money back.
Generally speaking, it's a provocative clothing issue. It's people that wear clothing that's, you know, and there's a pretty hard line there. We'll let a lot go, but ultimately there are people who, probably especially in Arizona with the temperatures, will come to the class, and it's subjective, isn't it? A little bit opinionated, right?
When you don't have a uniform and you're allowing them to wear whatever, it's hard. On the one hand, if you make the dress code very strict, then you're babysitting their clothing every day. But if you just say something kind of vague, then the person can say, he kicked me out, and I wore the same outfit yesterday, and that person just was kicked out, and I did.
Right. Yeah, and it could be subjective, right? So one person can say, well, I was, you know, they might let one person go or one person not go. And then it's, well, that was just the same as I was wearing. I get it, you know. I can see that as a problem, Dick.
Okay, so I would add that to my list of things to modify. You know, something that can get you to where you want. You still want to have control of the classroom, but you want to make sure that you're protecting people from maybe a teacher just has a bad night.
Yeah,
and decides it.
It does happen. Yeah,
you're out. I mean, the other one. You know, what's vulgar language? What's vulgar to a 65-year-old and what's vulgar to a 30-year-old is pretty different. So you might want to alter that one as well.
Vulgar, the language?
Yeah.
You want me to outline what's vulgar?
No.
What would you suggest on that one?
You know, a lot of our schools will use unprofessional conduct. You know, and it gives you, and you're there to help shape some of these people, even if they're only there for 3 weeks. But it gives you an opportunity to visit with them, counsel them, get them back on the straight and narrow. Here, you've got the club, and it has no velvet cover on it. We're basically telling you, you step out of line, and you know. So I would just say, you know. There probably is another way, again, to have that clause in your catalog and in your enrollment agreement that gets you to where you want to get without getting too far afield, you know, where somebody might just take and run with it, and then students before the complaint committee here, the state, and say, you know, I said poop. They kicked me out of class and school, and I got no refund. Right?
Yeah.
No other issues.
Well, on your advertising, you say phlebotomy training specialist is a, and this is all capitalized, nationally approved training program. Is that an organization? Because I just looked on Google, and I can't find anything.
So the accredited, so it's a little bit different. As you guys know, phlebotomy is on a national scale is massively fragmented. What people call themselves across the industry is, it's crazy what's out there. We call ourselves nationally approved because when we go to the ASCP, the American Society of Clinical Pathology, AMT, American Medical Technologists, the NHA, the National Healthcare Association, the NCCT, National Center for Competency Testing, the NAPT, the National, those associations approve us as phlebotomy schools based on our content, curriculum, and length of program. So we call ourselves approved because we have those approval letters from them that allow us to operate and give the exam. We used to use the term accredited, and that was, you know, a couple years ago, it became a big no-no because all of a sudden people were saying, well, you're not accredited. I'm saying, well, then we got to go back to the national bodies because they were telling us we were accredited schools to give their exam. So that term it's become more selective for just U.S. Department of Education title for that type of organization.
Well, if your admissions representatives can explain it just like you did, I guess fine. That's a very good explanation.
We're approved as both. So we're approved as a school because of our content and curriculum and all the hours that we go through. And we're approved to give the exam on campus or through proctors or through testing centers like PSI Testing Center, where we send the students out to a third-party testing center. Yeah, and I guess one of the stipulations to give the exam is the qualification process more.
I would list it, yeah. That's impressive doing that.
The national. There is no, you're correct, there's no national bond.
Right. Just that you have it all capitalized, so it looked like it was some kind of organization.
Mm.
But listing wall is impressive.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the marketing guy.
The other thing here is the accreditation body to credit. Licensees need regulatory, they approve. So that's like you always have to make sure that you use that language.
And we have
specifically based on who it is. Yeah, exactly. State agencies, Department of Ed, nursing, all those, they approve. It's not a credit.
Approved for a particular credit, which is you're allowed to.
Yeah. And like I used to say, accredited, because we have letters from the ASCP saying we are accredited to give this exam, and so we started using the accreditation term and got the slap on the wrist from most states. Right. That's a word I run from, like all my every fiber of my being.
Says you're accredited, but that's not accredited for school purposes.
Right. Right.
I think unless you're listed, accredited by an entity that's listed on GEO, not use the word accredited.
Yeah, we run from that word with if fast as and far as we can.
Okay. Yeah, you can cover a lot of them, but unfortunately I have some.
Oh, okay.
Don't feel bad, I always do.
Get her. I thought you were going to get them all.
I crossed out some. So your business plan is obviously something that isn't truly published, but it gave a lot of flavor and color and was very impressive about what all you and your school have done. But it was interesting. It said that textbooks are outdated within months. But then in the catalog, a 2012 textbook is required. So that seems contradictory. You're bragging about how up-to-date your stuff is. You update every month, but you're relying on a 2012 book that your business plan says would be useful.
Yeah. So let me shed some light, elucidate why textbooks are a problem. So Phlebotomy Essentials 8 just came out. It's the same as 1. It's released every year, obviously for reasons we understand in education, to sell more books. So I did a peer review for Pearson Publishing on the book, and I found 187 mistakes. 10 of them were direct OSHA violations. Just got released 6 months ago. So my frustration is that they want me to sell the book. Sell the book, sell the book, sell the book. But I'm like, well, the book's not good. It's not a good book. So we use a lot of resources out of those books that we like, but we also use tertiary information that we've created ourselves over the years that's more accurate and doesn't show you switching hands with needles and doesn't show you making blood slides where you'll cut your finger and stuff like that.
It's just contradictory that you're bragging about your materials, which sounded very impressive. I mean, that's a very quick turnaround response time. We find something new and the very next class has it.
Yeah, and we do that.
In the current, that's very impressive. It just seems contradictory that in your required purchases, a student has to buy a 212 book, book published in 212. That's 6 years ago.
Right.
And is it because that has base information and your stuff supplements it?
Correct, yeah. The information we like in the book is great. The problem is there's so much content that is... And so phlebotomy book's 515 pages. 100 pages of that's phlebotomy. The rest of it's filler information about the digestive system.
You require the students to get it.
Correct.
And then you tell them that your stuff supersedes it. So there's
we tell them it's an addendum to it. And we also have big caveats in the classroom that talk about, you may see this in your clinical setting. For example, semen collection. You do that all the time in Oregon. That's a big thing in Oregon. Nah, well, they don't do that in Utah. No one does that in Utah. No phlebotomist ever collects semen in Utah. So there's stuff that's written into books that might be just market-specific. So we like to make sure that they understand you might see that, but you may not.
Just to see country. And also in your business plan, it says you do not require a high school diploma, but your catalog says you do.
So that's, we do require a high school diploma. That's our baseline as opposed to doing an admissions test. So that should be corrected, Monica.
Says you don't require it.
Yeah.
And,
I think the business plan is, this is Monica's, my licensing gal's first time through her whole loan application. And so I was kind of hands off with it a little bit more than I would because I didn't want to, feel like, hold on 1 second. I don't feel like I was babysitting her. So it's probably more on me that I should have sat her down and said, let's go through this detail by detail.
Is the business plan your business plan?
Well, it's a business plan she pulls out of our business plan folder and sticks it in when you guys want one. So it's just a form document that probably needs to be corrected.
So we always want consistency. So if your business plan says you don't require a high school diploma, and then you're submitting that business plan as part of your application, we have a conflict, so we end up not knowing really what you have. So anything that you're publishing, whether it's on your website, brochures, anything you're putting out has to have the same information. And the other thing is that because of the shortness of your program, you don't necessarily have to have a high school diploma. If you are asking for one, that you say, or equivalents, what if they have a GED? If you require a high school diploma, are you accepting a GED? Are you accepting a homeschooler? Are you accepting a who have gone through 12th grade, like in Arizona, you have to you get a certificate of completion that you went through 12th grade, but if you didn't pass whatever that test, that soup test is, you don't get a high school diploma. So just make sure whatever you're saying is actually what you're doing. So if you say it must be a high school diploma, then we question whether you're accepting GEDs, homeschool, whatever. So just make sure whatever you say is what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think for the purpose of requesting a GED is to avoid the ABT test.
Did you say high school diploma or equivalent?
Or GED, yeah. Or equivalent.
Well, GED is equivalent. So if you say high school diploma or equivalent,
okay.
Good. The business plan says that they may be allowed to enroll if under the age of compulsory attendance in the state. But your catalog says you must meet the age requirement. So which is it?
It's a in the state of, in the state of Utah, and I think this is where the issue is the business plan was written. It's a generic form we submit, and we don't make it state-specific. And that's the trouble we're seeing right now. In the state of Utah, they allow compulsory high school, you allow students to enroll into compulsory high school attendance with both parent signatures. In other states, we're not doing that because we find it's a problem. They're just not mature enough to handle the class.
Wherever you have it written right now, your catalog says they have to meet the age of compulsory attendance. So if that's only for Arizona, then that's fine. If it's different in different states, then but the way you've written the business plan, it's like, we require it, but we might have some exceptions, which opens you up to why you accept his son and not my son. So again, you just need to have consistency.
Okay.
Your refund policy has that they'll be withdrawn after 15 days of non-attendance. But in other places, you talk about how if they fail or have difficulty, they can repeat the information. It sounds like the classes are once a month. So if I'm at the end of the program and there's something I get stuck with, and I just can't pass it or I got the flu, am I going to be able to, in a very short order, retake that material, or do I have to wait till next month when the wheel comes around and that's taught again?
Very good question. So the classes are structured day, evening, and weekend. So the day class that runs, so the evening class that runs Monday and Wednesday is a four-hour session. That same session is taught Tuesday during the day for Monday's class, and Wednesday's class is taught Thursday during the day. And then the eight-hour session on Saturday covers the Monday and Wednesday and Tuesday and Thursday classes.
So if I have flu for the week, I've lost the entire week. So I got sick on Monday, and I wasn't well enough to return to the following Monday.
Yep, you'll have to wrap that around to the next month.
Okay. Then picking them out after 15 days, you're going to be withdrawing them because they didn't attend that last module because they were sick, and they can't take it again for another 3 weeks, but you're going to kick them out after 15 days, and you don't allow a leave of absence. So you just have a conflict.
Yeah, continuity across all platforms.
Yeah, and usually, you know, the fact that you're specifically saying no leave of absence, then maybe you would have to say, I don't know, I don't want to give you the words, but something to explain that if it's because of repeating, need to repeat, then they can repeat in the next cycle and not be subject to termination or something.
Sure. Okay.
And it was a little bit confusing. This is my last one. On your refund policy, the $200 fee and
this is registration.
Right. Just the way it was worded, in one place you were saying refund of 100% of tuition, which is fine, so that would be just the tuition component. But then the next part, after commencement classes, the tuition refund minus $200 registration fee. So we just have to be clear that the before the beginning of class, they get 100% of tuition refunded, but you're going to keep the $200.
So you're correctly saying if you don't accept them or within the 3 days that you're going to give back everything from the 200. And in another place you say you're going to keep the 200, but then in the actual under tuition charges and refunds, you're just saying for the beginning of class, students are entitled to refund about 100% of the tuition. After the class, it's the tuition minus $200. I just want to make sure it's clear they know when you're keeping the $200.
Yep. So clarify refund policy.
And you're ready to do the book. So that's it. That's all I have. Anyone else have anything else? Are you interested in making a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that we approve conditional vocational program license application with stipulations. Those would include changes to the enrollment agreement and changes to the marketing, both brochure and website, to clean up the language there. And then also that the school would agree to have a $15,000 surety bond be maintained.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. Any further discussion?
Do
you agree to the surety bond?
I do. And I want to thank you guys for putting up with this whole first application process with. I should go home and take some lashings for this one, for sure, because this is not generally how we operate and conduct business. I get that, but I did this in Minnesota, and it's like a one-day process. You call them up, hey, can you send the application? They send it, and then you fill it out, and then they send you your license as a school, and it's just like...
We take it very seriously.
You guys do, and I appreciate that. California took me 4 years to get set up, so I appreciate having to go through the rigmarole. I just didn't wish we wasted so much of your time today, so I apologize.
All right, we have a motion second. We've accepted the terms. Roll call vote, please.
Craig Jacob, aye.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Dick Lutke, aye.
Jennifer Lick, aye.
Paul Nittman, aye.
All right. Motion's passed. Congratulations. Your license.
Thank you, guys.
Go well, forth and no more.
I promise we'll do you proud.
All right. The next order of business is a call to the public. Anyone would like to say something? No? All right. Then board business. Oh, is anyone on the phone who would like to make a public comment?
Yes, I would.
All right.
I'm not sure how many people are speaking. This is Kim Bailey. In reference to AI Arizona.
Art Institute.
Okay. I have a couple. I am not a current student. I am an advocate for the students that are being approached with the teacher.
Okay.
A couple concerns as an advocate for them, since they are reaching out to us on the Facebook IMAI. One thing brought to my attention is Mr. Lamontagne. Am I saying that right? Mountain?
Lamontagne. You're close enough.
Hi, sir.
Hello.
Yes, thank you. My apology. I just want to, it's my understanding that you are a previous president or administrator at that school?
I was in the past, correct.
Do you... any conflict of interest when you had visited the school that may have withheld some of the valuable information to them?
No.
The first thing that comes to mind is they're referring to AI Las Vegas, and is everybody aware of the graduate rate of that school? I think they reached maybe 23%.
The Las Vegas institution is not under this board's jurisdiction, so we would not have that information.
Okay. Understood, and I respect that. That is not a good school to be referring, or it's even an option. I think it would be valuable that they are aware of that.
Okay. That's up to the student to ask those questions, yeah.
We are not...
Okay, all right, so
we are not... orchestrating the teach out. We are That is, teach-outs are arranged between the institutions. If there's information that you are aware of, then I would suggest that you provide that to the students. We will not always have all the information available to us.
Okay. All right. So you are aware we are providing that information. We believe it is in the best interest of these students that they are the teach-outs. They do not go to the end. They are better off with learning forgiveness because potentially their careers, when they graduate, and if they, you know, so now that AI online is not an option, really this education is invaluable to them. So that is why you are not getting big responses.
It is not our, okay.
That's not your jurisdiction. Understood. Right? I just know that there was some facts in there, and I wanted to be aware. What is the purpose of this if it's really going to just continue on to the teach-out?
Ma'am, this is a call to the public. The board is not allowed to answer any questions at this time. This is your chance to address the board as a member of the public about any questions, concerns, or anything. They can either direct staff to look at it, put it on a future agenda, or just hear you out.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all I have to say. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public who would like to make a statement? All right. Then we're on to board business.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board, I gave to you my summary report of that provided to you the list of our first license renewals in the October cycle that are going through the portal. We've had a bit of a struggle, but we are getting there. I'll let Kevin explain more to you on that one, as well as the listing of those institutions who have submitted what are now called service requests, which are what we have historically always called the supplementals for new programs and change of locations and change of ownerships. I had in the past given to you the listing of the schools who had submitted supplementals in the program names. I don't know if that continues to be of interest or if this is sufficient for you to know the activities that the board is undergoing. We did receive notice, I think I got it yesterday, that Canyon State Institute is closing. Somewhat precipitous. We were unaware. The last renewal showed that they had revenue of over $1 million. They were financially solid. I don't know what happened in such a short period of time. And I guess there was a pending sale. The sale did not go through. And because of that, she has closed. I believe we're getting her records today at 3. So I wanted to let you know that, as well as the listing of the schools that are in teach out. And with that, I'll let Kevin give you an update on. There's no point in talking about e-document or doing the digitizing of the documents because there's the stall. There's been no communications to us from ADOA regarding that in what year? Something like that. Kevin can tell you more about e-license.
Yeah, just a brief update. So we did finish our first go-around with the portal. Thank you guys. You guys did a great job helping me through a lot of the process. So that was great. We brought 28 or 38 schools through the process. I'm currently working on the January, getting that ready for that renewal, which will go out September 1st. A few struggles. We still have Deloitte is still here months after the initial rollout, helping us through some of the last-minute challenges that we're having. But I would say we're probably 98, 99% there now. So I think moving forward, as I always tell Terry and Keith. We celebrate every hour that something doesn't go wrong with a little victory march. And now we're getting to almost a whole entire day. So it is improving day in and day out. So I think we're certainly going to get there. And but I think it's helped in terms of efficiency for our office. We no longer receive the thousands of documents that we used to receive. It's now everything is uploaded by the school directly into the system. So,
well, as you can tell, you know, from the board packets, especially the information, how we process it and how we're dealing with it is completely different than a year ago. This app is probably the second one that's actually gone through the portal. I will have to tell you, it's somewhat different when I don't have hard copies and I can't have stickies, and I now have my own, everybody now makes fun of me, I have my own NASA command center where I have three ridiculous screens. Now my hallway is really bad. But I'm getting there. I've made significant progress. So I think when all the bugs are worked out, it will be a good benefit. It's just, you know, different way of doing things. I'm old.
You know, and the feedback from the schools has been very positive. Once we get past the couple bugs that are here and there, I think the schools appreciate the fact that they don't have to do all of the paperwork that they did before. It's all there. Pretty logical to walk through it, easy to upload, even despite the few troubles that we did have with it. Very positive feedback from schools, so that's a good thing.
And we did get feedback from schools when things were stuck. You allowed them to send it a different way so that you could care about later, so that was accommodating.
The last, the July cycle, we're in October now. The July cycle was supposed to be the first one that went through the portal, but it was not working. So we had to, at that point in time, it was like, we had already said no paper, and now all of a sudden we can't get it. So we had to adapt really, really quick. Thank heavens it was one of our smaller cycles, but we got through it.
Good luck.
Next is the budget. What I didn't do this time that I used to do is I'd send to you the entire budget that ends up getting submitted to the governor's office, which is 30-some-odd pages, and it's budgetary accounting in public is very convoluted. So I did the short and sweet. This will show you, I provided to you the page 289 that is out of the FY29 appropriations report. That is the budget that was approved by the governor's office legislature for this year. It's this year beginning July 1st through June 30th of 2019. We are now submitting the budget for 2020. And you'll see in the sources and uses fund that we use, the appropriation that we were approved is 417.8. I did no increase. We have clarified with asset and those, all of us involved in e-licensing, it was our plan to put forth enhancements, but we're not going down that road right now. We're just trying to work out the bugs. So that may be down the road later. I did meet with the OSPB budget, our analyst yesterday. He was very interested in knowing the issues that we all 13 or 14 of us that have faced. So perhaps if there are improvements, it would be from DOA instead of out of ours, because you'll see that we did pay $80,000 for this. For the initial, then I think we had to pay an extra $3,000 or $4,000 because there were issues and we needed Deloitte to stay. Now we have $10,000 extra on ongoing costs, which I think is low. So we'll see, because this was kind of a hard week. I actually started doing the budget, and I knew we were having financial, or I was concerned over our revenues because of the number of schools we've lost. And this is the first year our revenues have not covered our expenses. And we have gone down from, I think it was a high of, what, 270, 268, down to 215. It started when we lost yoga, then we lost all the big guys. It's not going to change. I think we're going to probably level out at the 220. Supplementals are down. I don't, at a high time, we were around 400, now we're averaging around 2. So you can see our revenues have taken a definite hit. Now, appropriation, you don't ever want to reduce your appropriation because you'll never get it back up. So the bottom line is, don't spend your 417 and try and spend what your revenues have. They were really low this year. 346, I've never seen a 346. I had projected 410. The budget gentleman asked me yesterday, you're off 50,000. There's no way to project when a school's going to close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who would have thought? I mean, I knew they were closing, but it used to average. We'd get in 20 new, we'd close 20. Now we're getting in 10, and we're losing 50 over a two-year period. So there's going to have to be some decisions made. What those decisions are, I don't know. But we'll have to tighten the belt. But I'll probably go forward. I've played around with trying to increase the fees. I mean, like I said, we brought in 346. The budget gentleman asked me, how do you project this? And I just kind of winged it in the past. And truly, I mean, if you take 215 and average our fees of 1,000, there's not much wiggle room. Now, one of the things we've talked about this week is, and I mentioned it to him yesterday, and I do have a call in the governor's office, is increasing fees. We have historically been told, do not do that. I mean, any regulatory, not just me, but that, and a few have gotten through, but very few. We haven't increased our fees since 2006. We're one of the lowest in the nation.
I remember the last hearing, one of the education committee members was
That was Mr. Bradley.
Yeah.
But, he has done that every time that I've been there in front of him. He, you know, he says, I don't know how you do it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to have everybody agree. It has to have a
right.
Two-thirds vote. You're not going to, and even though it's a licensing fee, they still see it as a tax on the public. So it's frowned upon and said no. Now, I'm not going to lie, before our revenues were fine. I couldn't have said, you know, I couldn't have gone and said I need a fee increase when we were making money or our fund balance wasn't going down. That's not the case now, and I don't think we can make it in the future. So I think it's something that we definitely need to pursue. It may be too late for next year to go before the legislature, because first of all, you need to get the governor's office buy-in. And I just started working on it this week, so there hasn't been time. Also on strife, it looks like we'll have to bill for the next, I don't know how many years. You'll see where even that has gone down, because of course when you're losing the institutions, you're losing strife. The big guys, i.e. Pima, UEI, and MMI, but you know, we lost ITT, we lost all those. So we're only going to get in around, at best, $150,000 a year. Luckily, we're out of the warehouse. We're now over totally at Iron Mountain. And so, I mean, that's a set fee. Unless we come up with a lot of money, we can't digitize all those files sitting over there to get our cost to come down, which is what we're talking to them about. and installed. So we're also playing around with doing changing Strife. And something that we talked about yesterday, California has, I have to look into it, but if I remember, it's a pass-through. And it's written so that the student is charged on the enrollment agreement, the new students only, Strife. Even do a dollar.
Or even do $5.
I mean, now you're getting charged $10 for everybody. I don't care who you are, but if you're licensed, that newly enrolled students are charged by the institution $1, $5, and then that money automatically is transferred then to Strife. It doesn't cost the school $5 for the student to be protected. Something like that.
So how do you advance these proposals? What do you need? Is there anything that you think would be helpful to make this thing get traction? Do the school owners need to kind of get together and go, hey, if you don't take care of this and somewhat self-assess yourselves, you won't have a healthy agency to work with? Because we've seen in California, when that agency fell on hard times and they gutted the staff to nothing, you couldn't get a new program approval. It would take you 9 months to a year. Mm-hmm. Well, the private sector knows that time is money. They know that speed to market is what wins the day. They don't want to see that in Arizona. You know, you want to open up a branch campus or you want a new program approval and you don't have the staffing. But so often we sit on our hands and then, you know, we don't see the solution is within our grasp. I think if Governor Ducey saw the collective will of those that he's supposedly trying to protect, I guess the public and the business owners, if they were to rally together and go, yeah, we're okay with that. We're okay with fees going up. We're okay with passing some of it on to the student.
You could explain, like, how many hours on average takes for each type of application, and then the number of staff hours. If we're losing money on most applications, and obviously our time is free, but the amount of time that you guys spend on these applications.
And that was a proposal that Keith and I talked to the legislature 2 years ago, where I had done a summary, $800 for either one program or 20. And again, we're one of the lowest in the nations. And we said, just let us raise it maybe $1,000,
right,
maybe to $1,500, and then $500 per program. We were politely told no. So there was no, I mean,
what's behind the no? I know it's probably being recorded, but at some point it'd be nice to know what are the forces.
Because it's a tax increase. It doesn't matter. It's still a tax. It's a tax on the school because your fees go up. It's a tax.
Most schools are going to see this as the cost of doing business, though.
With public schools, my son was at U of A. There was a Arizona State financial aid fund. He didn't even use financial aid, but he still got charged that.
Mm-hmm. That's basically the Strife in California.
$20 million.
They're not even billing.
A component of our Strife, too, is that it's unfortunate, but there's a number of schools that pay the vast majority of the entire Strife fund. And as Terry was saying, you happen to be one. Motorcycle mechanics, UTI, that the larger schools pay the bulk of that particular, you know, because obviously they have the bulk of the risk in terms of students, the number of students that are in there. But we're not necessarily assessing in Strife risk associated with closures. It's a calculation that you pay and a calculation that you pay and a calculation that you don't pay. And that's certainly a consideration. And I know that I've had conversations, and we've had conversations with Fred at APSA and others, and there's certainly support for what we're talking about here, especially as it relates to Strife as a pass-through, some type of a pass-through that would be equitable across the board for all students, because, you know, again, regionally accredited institutions have failed in the state of Arizona, and we're still paying the price for that in terms of long-term forever price, and that's never going to go away.
Maybe it should. I mean, there was a day in time where they were too big to fail. Where you would look at a regionally accredited school and you'd say, they'll be here forever. And we now know that that's not true. And somebody does have to pay the bill. Whatever was negotiated behind closed doors to get them not to have to pay should probably be reconsidered. This is a new time and day and new era of this sector that probably needs to have a new deal.
And that pass-through that we're talking is certainly a way to make it equitable across all schools.
Sure.
With no real direct impact on the regionally accredited institutions and non-accredited institutions as well.
So that I assume is a legislative sort of initiative where you've got to sit down and have to have somebody craft something and try to get some legs to it.
Well, and as I've told these days, if I don't have support from the governor's office, there's no point. Because if he's not going to, what's the point of taking it through if it's not going to go? And I haven't had the chance to talk to Don. It wasn't until this week when I really started doing it. I mean, I thought that you had issues, but I didn't know it.
Well, I think part of it is we have to understand what their expectation is. If the board is supposed to be self-sustaining and not drawing funds from anywhere else in the state, then the fees that are being charged need to properly equate to the work that's being done by the board. And the same thing with the Strife Fund, that, you know, it's put in there as a student protection, but if we're not billing it correctly, then when the funds are out, then it's going to go back against the state. So again, if it's supposed to be self-sustaining, then I think that both of them have to be looked at to see, you know, what's the break-even point of, like, what is the proper way to set up the charging to make sure it's meeting the mission to give the students protection and to allow you to give the proper service to the schools. The more you work with the schools to make sure that they know what's expected of them from being licensed, they're better prepared to properly run the school, and then we would have less complaints, right? So if you end up having to, say, get rid of a staff member, now you have less availability to help the schools do a better job. You know, so it feels like it's a self-fulfilling problem, because you're if you can't do the job. But at the same time, if they're saying it's okay that if you're more of a public service, and it's okay that if you're not needing the money, then if that's the mission, then it's not a problem that you aren't bringing enough money to support the work that you're doing. It just depends on what the intention is, and I don't know.
We would not, if the fund balance dwindles, as the report shows that it does, you're not going to get to any general fund money for this board to do any business.
Okay.
I mean, that's period. You will not.
Do you have any data about, like, percent of hits on Strife between nationally accredited versus not accredited at all versus regionally accredited? Would you see something break out of the Strife Fund? I know I can see, I know it took a hit, but over time it's like, is that
to T and Everest?
Would that, you know,
Everest is huge, which is regional.
They were the first regional to close.
Right, but to hit, and to what percentage of the total Strife Fund did they hit? Is it, you know, they hit 50% of our Strife Fund based on the size? Was it?
I think there's two components of the Strife that you have to understand. So there's the claim, which is a one-year window, which is what we were talking about today with the Art Institute students, who's that window.
Records.
Then there's the ongoing, for life, we own the records. And those records right now are stored at Iron Mountain, 9 million of them that we have to keep forever.
We had to have the 10,000 square foot warehouse that we paid $9,000 a year for 3 years.
A month. So that took the hit on the strife. So those are the fees that, and it's also important to understand that bonding, the bond does not allow for payment for us to extract money for the lifetime of the student record.
It's only a year.
The bond is only for the out-of-pocket money that the student experiences. That's it. So that's certainly the challenge. Those are the lifetime costs of a school closing. If we get to that point where we have an extremely large strike fund, and we can take a couple of hundred, $300,000 or $400,000 from it, we digitize some of those 9 million records, that'll help. It's certainly the ongoing cost. But right. There's still staff cost, there's still processing cost, time involved. In last year, we did a little over 4,500 student records requests for employment, for transcripts, for other schools. So that's one of the challenges. Mm-hmm.
And you charge $10 a student record,
which does not cover the cost.
When they request it, like you're requesting transcripts.
I'm sorry. They might have a white
BMW
parking
garage. Is it on fire?
Thank you.
It's on fire.
I know.
Jaguar? No.
Anybody want a BMW that's parking their garage?
Black.
There.
Goodness. Yeah. Automatic starter.
So I will be meeting with Don when I can. In the meantime, I need to submit the budget by September 1st. So I need your approval to go forward with the budget request.
Okay. Yeah. And the summary points on the budget request are
basically it as presented on the sources and uses. It will show that there is not an increase. It's based upon the straight appropriation as approved by the legislature of 417.8 for our operating and the revenues that are showing less than what they are in the past, as well as the proposed. Again, this is assuming there may be some payments from Strife. There may not be any, because there could be of those that we don't know in the future, but if there would be any from the two institutions who were before you, we have bonds on them. So even though we would pay, we would then petition the bond to get it back. For the proposed amount as submitted in the source and use plan.
So you're submitting a budget that has no decrease or increase, just a static appropriation. That's state money, and you're not recommending for the budget to raise the fees.
That is not done in the budgetary
okay,
process.
That's something different.
That is done through
regulation
of legislators.
Okay.
The board would probably need to discuss whether they wish to pursue the increase of fees as a separate motion.
Do you feel that you need to approach the governor's office first to see if there's...
Yes.
Yeah. I thought we don't have appetite for that.
Put on the next agenda. I hope to talk to Don before then. It's only fair that she and I have a conversation. She is our policy advisor. She's always been very good to us. And she's always been aware, and she and I communicated this last week over the issues facing Summit and Art Institute. So she is up to date with what goes on with the board.
Great.
Anyway,
thanks, Mr. Chair.
No, I could, if so, I could put the legislative I just need the budget approval, and then we could discuss legislative changes.
Motion?
For a motion.
So make a motion to allow you to put, submit the budget as stated? All right, make a motion that the staff submit the budget that was presented to us. I have a motion second, any discussion? All those in favor by roll call?
Craig Jacob, aye.
Rich Leonard, aye.
Dick Lubke, aye.
Paul Pittman, aye.
Thank you, Paul. Dr. Mittman?
My pleasure.
Make you another motion to, reach out to
make a motion that staff approach the governor's office to discuss the feasibility of raising the fee structure for both the strife fund and for licensing so that the both of them can be self-sustaining.
Second.
Motion second. Any discussion? All those in favor by roll call?
Craig Jacob, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
Dick Lubke, aye.
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Thank you. And we're next.
All right.
Yes.
If you have any questions, you can reach out to me. I don't really talk too much about the school discussion. The only thing that I think you are already aware of is that the change to definition of a meeting. And now, when we can, as you know, if the planning board meeting is considered so just make sure you're not hitting reply all or send all or anything on the message. There's already abiding by the reporting statute that was authorized, that was 11:32 in December. And there's only one other thing that might affect you. I'm going to let us cash it out. You have a rule that states that you cannot extend the model in application if somebody with at least a 20% ownership interest in the school is at any time. And that is no longer the case. There's a new law. They can now, if somebody has been convicted of a crime, they can actually petition any board that they want to be licensed by and ask them if this would prevent them. And the only way the board can say yes, this would prevent them, is if the board has an important their right to run a business in the state. And also, you have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that it's a higher burden than what the state law is operating on. That, one, the offense they were convicted of is substantially related to the state's interest in public safety, and two, that the person is more likely to reoffend by virtue of having a license in the state. So it's a very high burden, but I don't foresee this. But that will be a policy decision on how the board handles decisions in the future.
Is that prior to submitting an application?
Prior to submitting an application or attending a school in a profession that requires
okay.
Educational care.
Okay.
So, before I go to nursing school and spend, $40,000, I'll go to the nursing board and say, hey, I was arrested for fraud 10 years ago. I did my time.
The only question that I had was when we make motions, are we supposed to state our name? We make a motion, state the name when they second, because it's always taken down in the notes, but for the verbal records, we need to state who it is who's making the motion.
We have verbal, but you did really good the last couple of meetings.
I'm at the point of making sure I do that.
Yeah,
okay.
It's good. And I think in the past, a lot of the times, it's been
okay. And meeting is adjourned at 1:08.
Thank you.